please welcome the chairman and chief executive officer of WWE, Vince McMahon. No chance, if that's what you got.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. It's come to my attention that very serious allegations have been levied against World Wrestling Entertainment by a few disgruntled former employees.
Don't you mean independent contractors?
Shut up! You're fired!
But I don't even work here.
All right. Well, I've changed my mind. It's what I do best. Anyway, I want everyone to know that we here at WWE take these claims very seriously and have conducted a pair of exhaustive investigations into both matters. And who better to conduct those investigations than me, Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Excuse me, sir, Mr. McMahon, are you sure that's the most transparent way to do things? I mean, to basically investigate yourself?
Who the hell do you think you are to question me? What do you bench anyway?
What?
What do you bench? 80, 90 pounds?
I'm not really sure why that's relevant.
I bet I could kick your ass in the gym. Haven't you seen my muscle and fitness cover? 69 years old and I'm in the best shape of my life. Anyway, I learned a long time ago that if you want to do things the right way, you need to do it yourself. You could just call me McMahon, P.I. When that rat bastard CM Punk decided to drag the good name of our WE medical staff through the mud, I conducted an investigation into this so-called purple lump on his back. And here's what I found. That son of a bitch never said anything to me about it. I also had our crack staff at WWE.com put together a video with various shots of CM Punk's ass.
It's a nice looking ass.
And from the looks of it, there doesn't appear to be anything sticking out of it. And if anyone were to know about things sticking out of one's ass, that would be me. By the way, did you see my muscle and fitness cover? Look at the guns. By the way, refreshments are courtesy of McMahon's Pastry Palace. Try a Samoan caramel twist. We're out of the Brian fudge cake. Anyway, I was also made aware of some troubling allegations of abuse and misconduct against our head trainer, Bill DeMott. As you know, in WWE, we ask everyone to say no to bullying. Be a star. Show tolerance and respect and all of that crap. Unless you go to the Middle East, then Darren Young, you can stay home. Anyway, after another thorough investigation, I assure you I have found these claims to be bullshit. Nothing more than a bunch of pansies who couldn't hack it inside my ring.
But sir, Dolph Ziggler's younger brother, who was also named as a victim of Coach DeMott, said that nobody ever questioned him about what happened. Is that really the sign of a thorough investigation?
Dolph Ziggler's brother? I barely even give a shit about Dolph. You expect me to care about his brother? Speaking of brother, did we take down that banner at MSG? Good. No more questions. I just want you all to know that we here at WWE will investigate any claims against us in a fair and thorough manner. And that everything bad ever said about us is 100% not true. So says McMahon, P.I.
It's business time, baby.
The Salamonster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Who's fat?
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Hello, hello, hello. This is episode 372 of the Salamonster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 8th. 2015, I am the Salamonster. Thank you to everybody who is listening right now on iTunes, those listening in Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, wherever you're listening to this right now. Thank you. We're going to have a special announcement about next week's show at the end of the podcast, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. I have to say right off the bat here, last Sunday, I found out that the Sound Off made the cut as a finalist in the 10th Annual Podcast Awards under the sports category. Over 65,000 nominations cast overall for the awards this year, so that's pretty damn impressive. We're also in some pretty elite company. We're up against the Dan Patrick Show, the Steve Austin Show, Talk is Jericho. So we need your help. This is where you guys come into this here. Voting is now open for the awards. They have a ceremony to announce the winners next month in Vegas. You can vote daily through Tuesday, March 24th. Mark that date down. You have up until that date. You can vote every single day. That is the deadline. I need you guys to turn out the vote. Go to podcastawards.com. You can bookmark that page on your laptop, bookmark it on your tablet, your phone. Vote every day. Get your friends and family to vote. We're under the sports category. You don't have to fill out any of the other categories if you don't want to. But you do have to fill in your name and your email address on the bottom before you click the submit button. Because you are going to get an email from them, from the Podcast Awards, asking you to verify your vote or else it will not count. So check your email when you get that email. There's a link in there. Click that link and then boom, that's it. Your vote is officially verified. So just please remember to check your email. Share it, retweet it, help spread the word. We've got just over 2 weeks left to make this happen. So if you are a fan of the Sound Off, support the Sound Off. It's already been a very good year. You know, we won Show of the Year, Host of the Year in the Wrestling Radio Awards. We cracked the top five of all shows on Stitcher Radio a while back. And now being a finalist here, you know, the only thing better than being a finalist is winning the whole damn thing. So podcastawards.com for that. Audible. We have our deal going still with Audible. You can get a free audiobook if you just plug our URL in, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. They have over 150,000 different titles to choose from. You can pick whatever book you want to. You just plug that URL in. You're going to be taken to the main page. And from there, you just have to sign up. You can register free for 30 days. You then can cash in your audiobook. And even if you cancel, if you turn right around and you decide, you know what, this isn't for me. I got my free book. I'm good. And you cancel your trial, you get to keep that book no matter what. And there is the new Shawn Michaels book that's out that has some more stories apparently he hasn't shared before, backstage stories. It talks about his faith and his life and all that kind of stuff. That book is available on there. You don't have to spend the $17 or $18 on it. You can get it for free by using our URL. The Chris Jericho book, which a lot of you guys took advantage of that back in November, shortly after the book came out. Whatever you like, just plug in audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can even spread that link around if you know somebody who likes books, audiobooks, if they're bored on the road, at the gym, whatever. If you've already cashed in your book, then give it to them. Maybe they can take advantage of it. audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You'd be helping the show out tremendously by doing that. If you like what you hear every week, please consider you can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a shout-out and a wrestling nickname. $30 or more, and beyond the nickname and shout-out, you get a quick plug for your own podcast if you have one. Just include that info when you make the donation, the name and the URL of where people can find it. Let's get through the shout-outs here. These are the people who supported the show via PayPal this week. Damn Straight, Michael Dorsey, The Reflection of Perfection, Abraham Lara, The Bronx Bomber, Robert Hordeens, Just Try Me, Travis McCoy, Light 'Em Up, Lamont Ambler, Mark the Almighty Adams, Scorpion Scott Kina, Tori All I Do Is Win Johansson, Sean Fear No Evil Fiorito, Atomic Drop Aaron Murray, Teo the Tank Rotibi, Slice and Dice Philip Kruger, West Coast Warrior Prince Gitta, Critical Condition Kevin Smith, Paranormal Eugene Evans, Indestructible Ian Martin, First Class LT Gilberry, The Ballistic Mystic Garrett Dean Bridgman, Jerome, You're Going Down, Eugenio, Fast Blast, Tim Banks, Heat Seeker, Ryan York, who you can listen to on the Instant Heat podcast. Just go to instantheat.podbean.com. So thank you to everybody who made a donation. Again, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. And last but not least here, as we get through all the key plugs right off the bat so we can get this out of the way, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster sounds off. You can get official Sound Off gear. That is our store. 17 different t-shirts up there right now. When you get yours, by the way, not everybody is doing this, but please tweet me your photos of yourself wearing the shirt. I will be happy to retweet them and share them with the rest of the world. And we're working on another design as we speak. So for those who have been asking, is there a new shirt going up? There will be soon. We're always thinking of new designs, but we're working on something right now. But don't forget to show some love to our earlier shirts. You know, we have the official Solomonster Sounds Off logo shirt that's up there as well. That's probably the best way, in all honesty. If you want to support the show by walking around, wearing the shirt, showing it off at a wrestling show, whatever, it's got the logo on there. Or the Sound Off Guy shirt, which is probably, if not the most, one of the most popular shirts that we have in the entire store. So whatever you want, we got 17 different ones up there for you to choose from. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. I want to give a shout out to Five Borough Wrestling. They had a show here in Brooklyn on Friday night at the American Legion Hall. I would guess maybe 150 to 200 people there. I had been in that building only one time in my life when I was like 10 years old for a friend's communion. And I had a blast. I know I don't say it enough, but you guys really need to get out and support indie wrestling. I know some of you already do, others don't. You really need to do that, because most of the time, in all honesty, you'll have way more fun than you will at a WWE show. At some random indie event with 150 people in an auditorium somewhere, you will more often than not have more fun than you will at the bigger shows. That's not always true, but a lot of the time it is. I mean, where else, for example, are you going to see a nearly 400-pound guy doing a tope through the ropes, right? Only at an indie show. So there were some names on the show, too. It wasn't, you know, just a bunch of local guys. Amazing Red, who I haven't seen much of since he left TNA. He had one of the better matches on the show. The Big O, for those of you who used to watch Zack Ryder's old Z True Long Island Story, you'll know him as one of Zack Ryder's good friends, and he had him on the show quite a bit. I wasn't aware that he was really seriously, you know, training to be a wrestler and out there doing indies, and apparently he is. He is part of a team called Mega Muscle, who look like a team that you would have seen every weekend on WCW Saturday Night or Pro back in the day. Very patriotic, too. They come out with the American flag. They've got the flag on their tights. Big dudes, too. They had a tag team title match. We had Tommy Dreamer wrestled on the show because we don't get enough of him on Impact. Tommy's cool. He actually requested, it's funny, you know, he's in the ring, and he's having a match. It was scheduled to be a match one-on-one against Brian Myers, okay, the former Curt Hawkins. And they had a local guy come out just before the match was to begin. He cut a promo. He's trying to make a name for himself, and so it looked like it was going to be a three-way. And then Myers took a powder. He said, "Now you know what, you guys wrestle. I'm going to just stand out here and watch." And it ended up turning into a three-way anyway. Myers did eventually come back in. But in the middle of the match, Dreamer looks over at me and he goes, "Can you hand me that chair?" And there happened to be an empty chair sitting next to me. And I said, "Sure," you know, and I gave him the chair. I was happy to oblige. And unfortunately, after doing so, it backfired on poor Tommy Dreamer. So, oops. EC3, Ethan Carter III from TNA, he wrestled on the show. Because how else are those TNA guys going to make money when TNA barely runs any shows anymore? Sanjay Dutt was there. The main event, Justin Gabriel, going by the name PJ Black. He headlined against Tony Nese, beat him with the, it was a 450 off the ropes in the main event. So, you know, it was a fun way to spend 3 hours. I was most entertained, I got to say, by Curt Hawkins, or Brian Myers. I guess I really shouldn't call him Curt Hawkins anymore. When he was outside during that match I talked about before with Dreamer and the local guy, and at first he refused to wrestle. Yeah, he was just on the outside in front of us, just critiquing and making funny comments. It was very entertaining, I have to say. He kind of stood out to me on this show. But everybody worked hard. And then, you know, you had the House of Hardcore show. That's why a lot of these guys were in town. This is a big weekend for wrestling here in the New York metro area, here on the East Coast, because you also had WWE running a show at the Barclay Center on Saturday night. Tommy Dreamer was doing his eighth House of Hardcore show, which apparently was a really entertaining show. A lot of people popped up on that show. Rey Mysterio made an appearance on that show, and Justin Roberts. I mean, they really went all out with that show. So a lot of good wrestling in town, and that's kind of what I mean when I say that you really need to get out more often if you're not already doing so, and just check out what wrestling is coming to your area. And if you're not aware of what wrestling is necessarily coming to your area, speaking of indie wrestling, this is the perfect segue to something I want to plug here. Steve Perry, who is a fan of the podcast here, he has created a new website called IndieList.net. It's an online resource for anybody who is a fan of independent wrestling or would like to maybe start checking out more indie events in their area. You kind of have to think about it like Yelp. It's kind of like Yelp for indie wrestling. You can learn about new promotions, nearby shows. You can buy tickets through the website to upcoming shows. Post reviews of a show or of a promotion. Browse other reviews so you know what you're in for. You just go on the site. I think you have to register. It's free. Doesn't cost you a thing. It's actually a great resource for indie promoters, I think, as much as it is for indie wrestling fans. So that's IndieList.net. Check it out. It's brand new. I think Steve's got a great idea here. He, you know, we've talked about the need for some sort of universal database that indie wrestlers can use to check on shady promoters. Remember there was a story about a shady indie promoter that I talked about months and months ago on the Sound Off, and I think I talked about this very idea and the need for there to be some sort of central resource for that. And believe me, there's a lot of shady promoters out there. Well, that function is actually coming next month with IndieList Pro that Steve is working on, so that's going to be separate from IndieList.net, and when that launches, I'll let everybody know, because I think, you know, what he's doing here, I think, is pretty cool, and I think there's a need for something like that, and now it exists. SummerSlam is official for the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. It will be held on, I think it's August 23rd is the date for SummerSlam tickets. They're having the actual ticket on sale next Saturday, March 14th. They had a pre-sale last night, and there was a house show at the Barclays Center. They were going to reveal the password. The great pre-show password, by the way, for the pre-sale, not pre-show, the pre-sale password for SummerSlam. You want to know what it was? SummerSlam. Ooh, how original. What an original password that was. So, you know, that's honestly, SummerSlam is the one, quote, big show of WWE's that I've never been to before. I've been to a Royal Rumble, I've been to a few WrestleManias, Survivor Series, never SummerSlam. So it'd be kind of cool to go, and, you know, we were thinking about it, and who knows, we may still end up going, I'm not sure. All I know is we tried to do the pre-sale last night, got completely shut out, there was just no tickets available, at least not for the quantity that we were looking for. But, you know, I know a few people who did get tickets, and I got to say something here about this. You know, the prices, and I don't know if this is Barclays, I don't know if this is WWE. My guess would be it's probably WWE, because they know they can get away with it. It's New York, it's Brooklyn, it's the market, right? They know that they can sell that building out. I'm looking at some of these ticket prices that they're charging for SummerSlam, and it's insane. It's absolutely insane to me. There's like a lower bowl or a lower level seat, not like front row or anything like that. These are just like a lower level regular seat. $350, even higher than that. Who would pay that kind of money for SummerSlam with the product the way it is now? Like, WrestleMania, I can kind of get that. I understand that because it's a special show, you know, a big stadium, it's a big event. And who knows? Maybe WrestleMania turns out to suck. Maybe WrestleMania turns out to be one of the best Manias in the last 5 years. Who the hell knows, right? But for Mania, I get that. I mean, God knows we've overspent on our Mania tickets before. But I've always had fun. For SummerSlam, or really any other show that they do, given the current product and how hit or miss it is, I mean, to spend that kind of money on a SummerSlam ticket, I'm sorry. I mean, that's just insanity. And I know some people maybe who are even listening to this right now may have already spent that money. And that's fine. I'm not, you know, judging those people. I'm just saying, to charge those kind of prices, I guess, look, I mean, if they know they can sell the tickets, I'm not going to fault them for it. I mean, it's a business, but I just think that's completely ridiculous. Let's talk about this Bill DeMott stuff, shall we? Because there's a lot of stuff to sort through here. This all unfolded over the last week. I'm sure you're all well aware of what happened. Bill DeMott is the, or was, the head trainer for WWE, the former Hugh Morris from the WCW days, or you may even know him from Tough Enough when he was the hard-ass coach on Tough Enough. So there were a lot of allegations that were made against him in the past that resurfaced over the last week from a radio interview or a podcast interview that a former NXT talent did. This person had been cut from developmental a while ago, but he had before then levied some pretty serious accusations against mainly Bill DeMott, had actually gone through the proper channels. He wrote a letter that was addressed to management at NXT or WWE. And anyway, a lot of that came back to bite Bill DeMott on the ass. And as the heat was building and more stories were coming out, more letters are supposedly going to be coming out. Even now, they may still come out. But he has resigned from his position as the head trainer in WWE. He posted a tweet that said, "I deny the recent allegations made about me. However, to avoid any embarrassment or damage to WWE, I've decided to step down from my role, effective immediately." And supposedly, this is a full departure from the company. This is not, he's no longer the head trainer, but we'll put him in a producer role or an agent role, or he'll be a scout or something like that. Supposedly, he is completely 100% gone, cut ties completely from WWE. Matt Bloom, the current Jason Albert, former Tensai, he has taken over as head trainer, at least on an interim basis. He is now taking Bill DeMott's place. I just hope that doesn't spell the end of him as an announcer. I really like Albert in that role. I think he has a lot of potential. I would hate to think that, you know, now with all the responsibilities that this guy's going to have, they would take him off commentary. They might. I hope they don't. I would imagine he's probably a lot more well-liked as well, because there are not too many people who seem to like DeMott, at least as a trainer. Who knows? Maybe as a person outside of wrestling and NXT and all that stuff. I don't know. But in his role, he was not exactly adored by people who were there. This all came again as a result. I mentioned the letter that was sent to management 2 years ago. The guy's name was Austin Mattelson. That's his real name. He was the one who sent the letter. The full letter leaked online. You could find it on your own. It's very long and very detailed on the misdeeds that it alleges were caused by or instigated by Bill DeMott. WWE, when this started to first bubble up about a week ago, WWE put a statement out claiming that these claims were investigated 2 years ago and there was no evidence that any of this ever happened. Okay, that was basically the statement that they put out. And Rob Naylor, who is somebody who worked with Dusty Rhodes as a creative assistant for NXT at that time, and generally he was very well liked. I remember when Naylor left, they let him go. Supposedly it was on very good terms. Everybody had all these glowing things to say about him. In fact, if you go back, when Rob Naylor got released by WWE, and this probably was a couple of years ago at this point, there were a ton of NXT people, wrestlers who were there at that time, who went on social media and posted messages of thanks to him and we're going to miss you so much. So Naylor, he wasn't there that long, but he was pretty deeply involved and he was very well liked. He even said, because he's been sounding off this week, and he even said that after Mattelson wrote that letter a couple of years ago and gave the letter to Canyon Seaman, and yes, that is actually the guy's name. Seaman is his last name. He's a former volleyball player that Triple H hired years ago to be his head of talent development. Had no experience whatsoever in wrestling. I'm not even sure if the guy was a wrestling fan. But that was during the time where Triple H was starting to bring in his own people. He got rid of a lot of the old guard. And I don't know what he was looking for in these people, but he brings this Canyon Seaman guy in here. And anyway, so Naylor said that after that letter was given to Seaman, the letter ended up with Bill DeMott. Now, keep in mind that a lot of the allegations made in the letter are directed at DeMott. He's accusing DeMott of some pretty, pretty bad stuff. So the letter ends up with DeMott, or at least DeMott is made aware of it. And then Naylor sees DeMott that day pulling guys into a room to ask them about it. So the guy being investigated was the one doing the investigating. Think about how absurd that is. Okay? And that'll give you a sense here of what we're dealing with. So, not surprising there's a lot of euphoria, supposedly, down at NXT. Max Landis, who is a screenwriter and a big wrestling fan, he tweeted, this is what he tweeted. He said, "The texts that I'm getting from my friends from NXT right now are basically along the lines of, 'We got Bin Laden,' levels of emotional release." Wow. That says a lot right there. DeMott has been with WWE for a while, but it's off and on. And it's been a rocky relationship. So obviously when WCW went under and they brought guys in for the invasion and the whole alliance storyline, you know, Hugh Morris, Bill DeMott, he was part of that whole thing. So he goes back a number of years. WWE at one point had two different developmental systems. They had Ohio Valley Wrestling and they created one called Deep South Wrestling, which was run by one of the former assassins, Jody Hamilton. And DeMott was either a trainer or the head trainer there. They brought him in. This would have been, I want to say this probably goes back to like 07, 07, 08, somewhere around then. And not long after DeMott came in and started training guys down there, they shut it down. They shut down Deep South. They sent somebody there to see what the hell was going on. I don't know if people were getting hurt or they weren't really churning out very many guys. They sent somebody down and they realized that, boy, things are really in disarray down here. And they shut the whole operation down. Deep South was done. So DeMott was gone at that point. The following year, they brought him back. That was when they did the Tough Enough reboot. They made him the head trainer in Florida the year after that. So DeMott was gone. Now he's back. And the thing with DeMott is a lot of the stories here that we're hearing about now, those stories first started cropping up in Deep South when he was in Deep South. Then he went away. Then they brought him back. And all of a sudden, ironically, as luck would have it, those stories started to crop up again. After they brought DeMott back into the company. And we're talking about stories of, you know, verbal abuse, in some cases physical abuse. I mean, look, it's one thing to be a hard ass and to say to somebody, hey, you suck, you're a piece of shit, and really just kind of, you know, really dig into them. It's a completely different thing when you have guys saying, we were getting hurt because we were being overworked, and then when we're hurt, okay, and we got a broken leg, or we have a torn this, or a, you know, a broken that, and they're there in a cast or a boot, and DeMott is hitting them in the boot, you know, kicking them in the boot, hitting them in the cast, they have a head injury, and so he's patting them on the head. I mean, that sort of shit, you know, you can't stand for that kind of stuff, right? Now we're talking about actual physical abuse here. That doesn't benefit anybody. It doesn't benefit the company because these guys are there to train to be wrestlers. They're hurt, possibly because DeMott is just working them far more than he should, but whatever, they're hurt. And now you've got a guy who's actually, you know, there's a guy here who's got a head injury or a concussion. You're going to bang him on the head? And there are people there who witnessed it. They saw this. This is not he said, she said. There are witnesses to all of these things. So there's a lot of allegation. And then there's comments that DeMott made. I mean, the Bulldog one to me is really, you know, I mean, that was one of the more tasteless things. You know, there was a guy who, I don't know if they were getting ready for a show, and DeMott was like, what's your finish? And the guy said, well, my finish is the Davy Boy. And that basically meant the running power slam. That was British Bulldog's old finishing move. Well, DeMott didn't know what he meant by that. And so in response, DeMott said, the Davy Boy, is that where you, you know, you turn blue and you drop dead on the lawn? And there were a lot of people who were very upset because back then you had, you know, Harry Smith, who's now working over in New Japan. But he was in the developmental system. He may have even been in the room at that time. I'm not sure if he was or not. TJ Wilson, right, the current Tyson kid who almost grew up a Hart, right, trained with them, very close to the family. He would have been privy to that comment, and I can't imagine they would have been too thrilled to hear that DeMott made a comment like that. So just one story after another after another after another. And then you get into the sexual harassment stuff, which I'll talk about a little more in a second here. It wasn't just one thing. We're not talking about one or two people here who are bitter because they got cut, or Bill was mean to me, and so boo-hoo, you know, I'm going to get back at him now. We're not talking about that. This goes far beyond that, okay? There's a pattern now. There's a pattern here of behavior. Think of the Bill Cosby stuff. Remember I ranted on the Bill Cosby stuff all those, you know, a couple months ago? Now, one doesn't have anything to do with the other in that Bill Cosby allegedly raped women, okay? To the best of my knowledge, I don't think Bill DeMott ever raped anybody. I certainly hope not. But one or two stories, okay, you know, but when you get a third and a fourth and a fifth and a sixth and a seventh, and there's a pattern to these things, where there's smoke, there's fire. You can't ignore something like that. You can't sweep something like that under the rug, which is almost like what WWE did here. They did their, quote, investigation. We didn't find anything wrong, so therefore, nothing to see here, right? That's WWE's great thorough investigation. Look, I'm glad Bill DeMott is gone, but this should not get WWE off the hook for failing, I think, to act on this stuff sooner. Their investigations are a sham. We all know that. You know, for example, Dolph Ziggler's brother, Ryan, who was in developmental at one point, and I think he broke his leg or whatever, had a boot on his foot. He is mentioned in the letter that Maddison wrote as being kind of one of the victims of Bill DeMott. He's mentioned in the letter, and yet you would think if they're conducting a thorough investigation, they would talk to this guy. This guy is mentioned. He's name dropped in the letter. You're investigating these claims against this guy, and Nemeth says, nope, nobody ever bothered to talk to me. It's like Rob Naylor. Rob Naylor went on Twitter and sent a tweet to Triple H and said, hey, I'd love to talk to you next time you're back in Orlando because nobody ever talked to me. And I was there for some of this stuff. I got a lot to say. Nobody ever talked to me. And, you know, Chris Jericho, people were telling me Chris Jericho posted a tweet, and I saw what he did. He posted a tweet that talked about the allegations, and he basically defended Bill DeMott. You know, he said DeMott was a friend, and as a trainer, he, you know, some guys just can't hack it. It was something like that. And then he went and he deleted the tweet. And it's not like Jericho is even under contract right now to WWE. You know, so this tweet and delete bullshit, I think, is even worse. Like, if you want to stand up for your friend and say something, then have the fucking balls to keep it up there. You know what I mean? But he went and he made an ignorant comment, probably because he didn't have all the facts. And maybe when he realized that he didn't have all the facts, or because he was getting a lot of heat from people, he took it down. Because you know what it was? I remember what it was now. Jericho talked about how when he trained under the Harts, it was 10 times harder or 10,000 times worse. you know, as if that condones all of this bullshit. Oh, when I got into the business, things were so much worse. These guys don't know what they don't know how good they have it. That's not an excuse. What a bullshit excuse that is. That is not an excuse. If there's some bad shit going on because you had it worse, so therefore keep your mouth shut and don't say anything about it. I mean, what kind of defense is that? These are not just scrubs who are making these allegations. I mean, there are name wrestlers who are out there who used to work for WWE and now they're working indies or they're in TNA. You had Trent Beretta go on Twitter and say, thank Christ, you know, it's about fucking time. EC3 goes on Twitter and says, it's about fucking time. Are they lying too? You know, and of all places, I found there was some great perspective in a post on Reddit that I saw. There was a guy who, an Army veteran, who actually made a post. And he was very upset, and he was asking people to stop comparing Bill DeMott to a drill sergeant. Because there's been a lot of comments made like that was what Bill DeMott's role was. He was told by WWE to be a hard ass. He was kind of a, he had a drill instructor mentality, okay? I might have even made comments like that myself in the past. But this guy, I thought it was a very interesting post that he made. He was saying, at no point during basic training did a drill sergeant ever lay a hand on me or physically assault me in any way. I never saw or heard of this sort of behavior occurring to any member of my platoon or my company. Everything the drill sergeants did had a purpose that, in hindsight, completely made sense. Yes, people get yelled at, and there is corrective training in the form of calisthenic exercise, but nothing is designed to injure you or put you at an unreasonable risk for injury. Not only that, but my drill sergeants led by example. 20-mile ruck marches, they were right there next to us, usually with a heavier pack. They were present for every 5:30 a.m. run. If they wanted you to take apart and put together a 240 Bravo machine gun in 2 minutes or less, they would show you how to do it in a minute or less. And then we had a wrestler who also piped in on the post here and said that his whole issue with the DeMott thing being compared to a drill instructor, regardless of method, his point was drill instructors are training people to be armed fighters and potentially kill people. WWE is training people to be athletes who learn how to pretend fight and do it as safely as possible. Okay, now that's not so much an argument for having only teachers or coaches who can perform the training themselves. There's a lot of very smart people who maybe never wrestled before or certainly are in no physical condition now to do the things that they ask these kids to do. It's more about this comparison. And like I said, I've made the mistake myself of referring to Bill DeMott as some sort of a drill instructor of NXT. That's an insult to real drill instructors because Bill DeMott sure as hell couldn't do half the shit even in his prime that he was asking these guys to do. And I thought that was a very good point, that to refer to this guy as a drill instructor is an insult, which it is, the actual drill instructors. The other aspect of this whole thing, which just makes this whole thing even shadier, are the sexual harassment allegations, and it looks like there was some sort of cover-up in developmental. There was, I think, a strength coach or a trainer who had reportedly been sexually harassing different women and doing different things. I don't have to name any names here, but that's the basic gist of what was going on. And there were some women who spoke up, and in some cases, there were some women who were shortly thereafter mysteriously let go from developmental. And it's funny that, you know, Ivelisse's name came up, and I remember when Ivelisse got released from WWE. I thought it was stupid when she came in for the gut check and TNA ended up not keeping her. I thought that was dumb. But WWE had her first. You remember, she was on that season of Tough Enough. And she improved, she got better, she's an athlete, you know. She really can, she's actually trained now in MMA as well. She's a great athlete, she's got a good look. And they let her go. And I can never understand why they let her go. And there were stories, well, it was because she had a poor attitude, which of course she denied, but what else is she going to say? So, but that was the rumor. Oh, she had a bad attitude, so they let her go. But it was always very weird to me that they would let somebody like that go. And now I see her name all of a sudden is kind of coming up again in this conversation. Put two and two together, look at the timeline here. You can kind of figure out who some of these women were. And then she went on Twitter, flat out, she actually went on her own Twitter and she said, if you only knew my story, you know who I'm talking about, I lost everything for speaking up, I was the first, the warning to others. So there it is, it's right there. Now again, that's her claim. Could she be lying? Sure. Maybe she did have a bad attitude and that's why, and everything was on the up and up and they were being 100% honest in why this woman was let go. I look at this and I say, now it all makes sense. Now it all makes sense to me. Why she left, why they let her go. And if that's true, that's pretty goddamn sad that you would speak up and instead of somebody acting on this you get punished for it because they don't want this to come out because this is going to be bad publicity for the company. You're causing trouble. We can't have that here. You got to stay in line. Right? That's basically what they're saying here through their actions. Now, the other aspect to this, anybody who watched Total Divas that first season, now I knew who she was, and I actually watched the first three episodes from that first season of Total Divas, so I saw a little bit of her on there. That Jane Geddes woman, Triple H had brought her in. She had been a pretty big name, I think, in women's golf, and a really great athlete. They brought her in to be a part of the talent relations, maybe the head, actually, of talent relations, even though she had no prior experience in pro wrestling. But again, that seems to be Triple H's MO here, bringing people in that don't have any sort of prior wrestling experience. So they brought her in. She seemed like a nice enough lady. I remember seeing her on Total Divas and hearing about her background. Very impressive. And Jane Geddes was demoted from that position some time ago. And in the last month or two, she was actually released from the company. That was the rumor, that she didn't leave on her own. She was cut. She was released from WWE. Very quietly, too. Not a lot of people knew that that happened. Were it not for an item in the Observer newsletter a week or two ago mentioning that, I don't think anybody would have known that this woman was let go. And the question is why? They seem to be very happy with her. She got some publicity, great publicity for the company and some major mainstream media. She was a... And here's the thing to consider. Also, she was a woman. She was a woman in a position of power in that company, and they love that shit. You know, they got Michelle Wilson in the company in a high-up position, Stephanie McMahon, obviously, right? They're all about empowering women. Jane Geddes had the background. She had the pedigree. She got them some good publicity. I never heard stories of her being awful at her job, other than CM Punk complaining that Geddes was unwittingly butt-dialing him, I guess, after he had left the company. I know he told that story on Cabana's podcast. But it's very odd that Jane Geddes just disappeared. She was removed from her position, and then ultimately she was gone from the company. And from the sounds of these stories, if you read up on the sexual harassment stuff, this was brought up to Geddes probably not long before she lost her position in the company. And it sounds like she was trying to act on it. You know, people were telling her, hey, listen, these women are being sexually harassed. There's something going on here. You need to look into this. And then mysteriously, Jane Geddes is gone. All I'm saying is, you look at all these stories together, there's something going on here. And if you don't think there's something going on here, then you got your head up your ass. Now, getting rid of DeMott is great. The guy sounds like a real piece of work. And if nothing else, he's causing problems for the company. If I'm in WWE, and I'm so sensitive to negative publicity, and God knows WWE has had a ton of negative publicity recently, even the stuff with women and AJ Lee, that could have blown up into something huge on Twitter if TMZ picked up on her comments, for example, that they don't pay the women like they pay the men and all this kind of stuff. They don't need that kind of publicity. If I got somebody like Bill DeMott and there's a pattern of behavior here, I get rid of the guy. He's too much of a liability. I don't know why they didn't get rid of him before, why it took this long, and why they even bothered putting that stupid statement out that we did an investigation and we didn't find anything wrong. You know, the belief is that all those cameras they put in the Performance Center, which is one of the things that Triple H touted when he unveiled this great $5 million Performance Center that they built, and the state-of-the-art facility, and all the different rooms, and the promo room, and all the weight, you know, the weight room, and everything else, there's cameras everywhere in that building. You can't take a step without being on film, without being on camera. Triple H can be back in his office in the tower in Stamford, and he's got a live feed, a connection to the Performance Center, so he can see what's going on. And the belief is that the reason for all the cameras was because of all the allegations that were from the past against DeMott about stuff that was going on. That was why the cameras were installed. Now, they won't admit that. WWE hasn't said that. But it sure seems like that probably would explain why there's cameras all over the place in that building. If you got to put cameras in to, you know, to keep your eye on this guy, why are you even employing him in the first place? Why not just get rid of him? Now, was this a situation where he honestly believed what he said in the tweet, and he really did feel like he was being too much of a distraction, and he decided to step aside on his own? Or, as I believe, was it a case where WWE or Triple H or whoever went to him and said, dude, the heat's too much, you gotta go, and they gave him a chance to save face and bow out gracefully on his own, and as opposed to the story being WWE fired Bill DeMott, it became a story of, well, Bill DeMott doesn't want to be a distraction, and so he decided to step aside on his own. I don't believe that for a second. I believe that it was WWE going to him and saying, you need to go. It was basically their way of shit-canning him, and they gave him the opportunity to save face and make the announcement. But it wasn't just allowing him to save face. What I think happened here also, they really did put themselves in a bad position by putting that statement out that we did an investigation years ago, and we didn't find any wrongdoing. Well, now as the heat was turning up and up and up and up, and all these other stories were coming out and the letters were coming out, how would it make WWE look if they suddenly out of nowhere said, we have released Bill DeMott? Really? Well, what about that investigation that you did? Are you now admitting that your investigation was full of shit? That your investigation was a sham? Of course, they don't want people to know that. So they go to the guy and they say, listen, you know, hey, you gotta go. I'm sorry, but you gotta go. That's what I think happened here. And I don't know that, but that's what I think happened here. But the end result is the same. He is gone, hopefully for good. And I think probably from the sounds of it, developmental will be a much happier place because of it. So let's get away from all that icky stuff and talk about Raw from this past Monday night. Raw was live from Newark, New Jersey, the distractionrollup.com counter. You got two for the price of none this week. We actually had tons of different distractions on the show. Distractions into finishing moves, distraction roll-ups, even a distraction kick to the nuts. Oh, I'm sorry there. I was distracted for a moment. I actually thought Raw was a good show this week. It never felt like it dragged the way it usually does. Jon Stewart, I thought, played his role perfectly. One of the best celebrity guests they've ever had. The Mizdow turn continues to build nicely. The Divas got more time this week than they did last week. AJ Lee's return felt like a big deal. Triple H was at his... he was at the height of his douchiness here on this show with Booker T. Luke Harper and Daniel Bryan, for the few minutes they had, was stiff as all hell. Flying Reigns at the end of the show I thought was a fun sight to see. And then that Paul Heyman promo, I mean, what more can be said? Just an ungodly great promo from one of the best talkers that we've probably ever seen and will ever see. So there was a lot of good stuff on this show. It was not a clean sweep. I hated the Stephanie McMahon segment with John Cena, but that was really the only thing I hated about the show. Bad News Barrett lost yet another non-title match, this time to Dean Ambrose, making him 1-8 in non-title matches on television since winning the Intercontinental title. Champs are chumps. R-Truth was on commentary. He's back to being crazy R-Truth, which I thought was entertaining. Luke Harper showed up. He was standing behind R-Truth. He took the Intercontinental title away from him because the Intercontinental title, you see, has been a hot potato. Everybody is taking the title. I don't know why. These are grown men. These are grown adults. Taking the title does not make you the champion. I never really got that, but they all want the belt. So Luke Harper took the title, and now he is going to be part of this multi-man ladder match at WrestleMania. We had a segment backstage with Mizdow and Miz. Mizdow, you see, ever since he's been fired as Miz's stunt double, has been getting a lot of work in Hollywood and television, and he was doing a commercial shoot. I guess backstage, they were shooting a commercial. They had the green screen. It was Mizdow arm-in-arm with two beautiful women. Miz came in. He was not happy about this, so he kicked Mizdow out of the shoot and said, I'm taking your place. And Mizdow tried to talk him out of it, said that wasn't a good idea. Miz didn't care. He called Mizdow soft, your brain is soft, and all this kind of stuff. And so the reveal was that, unbeknownst to The Miz, it was a commercial for a Viagra knockoff called Niagara. I know, riveting writing here. That stuff was kind of corny, but it built to Miz exploding. He had brought all the jobbers. He's in the jobber locker room, right? So all the jobbers are in there, all the lower card geeks are in there, and he's bringing them all in for the debut of his brand new commercial, which apparently, talk about quick turnaround on that commercial. He was just filming it. Now they're airing it. So he found out what it was for, and it was very embarrassing. And he got up in Mizdow's face, and he was yelling at him. And I don't remember if he may have slapped Mizdow or shoved him, or he made one comment too many. And Mizdow took the sunglasses off, got all serious, and you could hear in the background. This is one of the times I enjoyed them leaving the crowd track in the background. The place started to go nuts. They were so ready for Mizdow to knock this guy's block off. And then he backed down, and everybody booed. I love that. I thought that was great. I think the place is going to go apeshit when he tosses Miz out to win that Battle Royal at WrestleMania. It will be a glorious moment. What they do with Mizdow after Mania, probably not so glorious, but I'm enjoying this while it lasts. I thought this was good. Bray Wyatt set a casket on fire as a message to The Undertaker. On SmackDown, he revealed that he is now in possession of The Undertaker's sacred urn. You know, for something so sacred, he sure does lose that thing a lot. I don't know, if I had something that was that meaningful to me, I'd keep that shit under lock and key, but apparently Undertaker doesn't have a vault or a safe somewhere in his house. So he's going to use the power of the urn to summon the Undertaker from the dead. You know, it's... Are we really still doing stolen urn storylines in 2015? And after we just did this with CM Punk and Paul Heyman 2 years ago, it's not like, well, we haven't done this in 10 or 15 years. No, you just did it 2 years ago, and you're going back to the same tired story again because you don't have anything any better. I've been waiting. I've been waiting for this wonderful buildup that people have been telling me about between Bray Wyatt and The Undertaker. Because I was not a fan of doing this match. I am not into the idea of this match at all. But I had people telling me, well, the buildup is going to be great. You got two dark characters, Salamancer. The mind games. The mind games they're going to play with each other. Meanwhile, we haven't seen The Undertaker on television yet. I don't know that we are going to see him on television before WrestleMania. I hope we do. But we haven't seen him yet. We haven't heard from him yet. You got Bray Wyatt out there cutting, you know, promos on him every single week. Now he's got the urn. And I don't know. It just seems very played out to me. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for this great build-up to this match that people have been telling me about. I will say, the promo that he did with the casket on Raw, I liked it. I liked it because it was the first time that I've heard a Bray Wyatt promo where he wasn't just talking in riddles. He was actually very straightforward. He called out The Undertaker. He was very straightforward in what he said, very easy to understand. I like that aspect of it. The urn stuff, it's just so passé to me. It's so passé. It's so 15 years ago. Forget 2 years ago. It's so 15, 20 years ago. I don't know. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for this wonderful buildup that people were telling me about. I haven't seen any of it yet. I'm still waiting. The Usos and Naomi beat Natalya and Kid Saro after Naomi pinned Natty with a distraction roll-up, number 8 on the year for this show. Natty hurt her ankle in the match, so she had tagged out, but then Tyson tagged her right back in. She got pinned. So apparently after patching things up, things are once again not well between Tyson Kidd and Natalya. They can't seem to make up their minds. The writers, that is. John Cena came out for a promo. That's always fun. He entered himself into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania, since Rusev had turned down his request for a rematch for the United States Championship. Apparently he did the same thing last year. I have no recollection of that at all, that John Cena entered himself into the Battle Royal last year too, but I got a ton of tweets from you guys telling me that he did, so, I mean, if it's on Twitter, it must be true. Spoiler alert, he will not be in the Battle Royal. Did not take very long for Stephanie McMahon to come out and tell John Cena flat out, you will not be in the Battle Royal. And in coming out, she completely emasculated John Cena on the microphone. Stephanie did what she does best. She dressed him down and made him look like a fool. So let me summarize this. I'll summarize Stephanie McMahon's promo on John Cena just very simply. You're nothing without WWE. It's about where would John Cena be without WWE, not where would the McMahons be without John Cena. And on and on and on and on with this. All the while, the fans were cheering Stephanie McMahon, and they chanted yes when she teased that John Cena may not even be on the WrestleMania card this year. Can you imagine? Imagine for a moment, in any other era of wrestling, in any other era of WWE, dressing down your top star the way that Stephanie McMahon did to John Cena on Monday night. And without any retaliation at all, yes, Cena called her a bitch, and it got a nice little pop, and then what happened? Unlike John Cena and all the babyfaces when they get talked down to, Stephanie McMahon came right back at him and shut him down. She's like that annoying friend who always has to get the last word in. And so John Cena stood there looking upset, and then he looked angry, and he didn't say a word. Where would you be without WWE? I got news for you. WWE would be in deep dog do without John Cena for the last 10 years. You can bitch and moan all you want to about John Cena, but you take him out of the equation, who's the guy selling shirts? Who's the guy packing house shows? You tell me. Randy Orton? Really? Randy Orton? I mean, please, give me a break. And by the time they figured out that this CM Punk fella is kind of over, maybe we ought to push him, that was 2011. That was only 4 years ago. Without John Cena, they are in dire straits. I'm not going to say they're dead, because I don't believe that they're dead, but they're in deep shit without John Cena. But I'm just sitting here trying to picture Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, Undertaker, Steve Austin, The Rock, Hunter, okay, Triple H, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, all of these top stars they've built around over the years, I'm trying to imagine them just standing there and taking all of that abuse on TV with the sad puppy dog eyes. When did this roster lose its balls? Whatever happened to real men on this show? They've done this with Cena. They've done this with Bryan. They've done it with Dolph. They've done it with Ryback. They did it with Rollins, with the Big Show, back when Big Show was against the Authority. Remember the infamous episode where Big Show was on his knees in the middle of the ring crying for his job? Maybe he was just fired, and he's on his knees in the ring crying. Tears are just streaming down this guy's face. This guy's 7 feet tall, 450 pounds. He's in the ring crying. He's a giant. Yeah, he's a giant pussy. The other aspect to the Stephanie thing is that I'm listening to this. I'm paying attention to her words. Because remember, words matter here. And it sounded like, you know, a not-so-veiled message directed at the WWE champion, Brock Lesnar, that you're not bigger than this company. This company will survive without you, so get in line. As if Brock was even watching this show. He was probably on a moose hunt somewhere, flinging arrows at him with his bare hands. So Curtis Axel came out to interrupt the proceedings here. He had some words of praise for Stephanie McMahon. Curtis Axel, by the way, will be in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And what happened next was he was in a match. He was put in a match with John Cena. John Cena got on the mic. He was very angry and in a very low, monotone voice, told Curtis Axel flatly, leave the ring now, because if you don't, basically you're going to be carried out of here. Something very bad will happen to Curtis Axel if he does not leave. And Curtis Axel was doing the Hulk Hogan poses. He's being a goof. People are eating it up. I laughed. I thought he was entertaining. John Cena did not find him very entertaining. But I thought, okay, we're probably going to get John Cena just snapping. He's going to kill this guy. Remember that time on Raw when John Cena just killed Michael Tarver back? This was after the Nexus angle and everything. I remember an episode of Raw where Cena just went nuts on Tarver. And Tarver, I think, later on even accused Cena of, like, shooting on him during that segment. So we've seen examples where John Cena has snapped, has lost his shit, and just gone crazy. And that's what I was expecting here. Well, never happened. They had a match. John Cena beat him with the STF. And Axel rolled out of the ring. And that was it. And then Rusev and Lana came out, and again, Rusev denied John Cena a match at WrestleMania, because Stephanie McMahon had told John Cena, listen, you're not going to have a match on the show unless you find a way to convince Rusev to give you a title shot, which will happen at some point, but it did not happen on this show. Rusev said no, the flag came down, they played his music, and that was the end of the segment. I hated the Stephanie stuff, and on SmackDown, they had Rusev beat Jack Swagger with the Accolade. I mean, stop me if you've heard this before. Talk about two guys who, if I never see them in a ring together again, I will die a happy man. And some of you wonder why I don't bother watching SmackDown. Why don't you watch SmackDown, Salamos? Do you really need me to answer that question? Really? After all the things all the examples I've given you and all the things I've said about SmackDown, and then this match being on SmackDown, do you really have to ask me that question? I bring this up, though, because after the match, Curtis Axel challenged Rusev to a U.S. title match on Raw this Monday. And I hate to say this, but one way to goad Rusev into giving Cena a match at WrestleMania would be for Cena to interfere and distract Rusev and help Axel win on Monday night. So that way you also get around putting the U.S. title on Cena if the title is now out of the picture. Cena doesn't need the title. And he can get his win back over Rusev at WrestleMania in a straight singles match. I am not endorsing this idea. Do not mistake this for, you know, me wanting to see that happen. I think that would be insanely stupid and one of the most brain-dead decisions they could possibly make. So I hope that is not what they have planned for Raw. You know, you want to give Axel some hope spots in the match, a little bit of offense, go for it. Although the way he's been booked as a comedy character, and as seriously and strongly as Rusev has been booked, this really should be nothing more than the bell rings, and Axel is doing his Hulk Hogan poses, and Rusev kicks him in the mouth, and taps him out in the Accolade. That's exactly what that match should be. So hopefully Rusev will kill him dead, and they won't go with the distraction finish, which if this were anybody else, I mean, if Rusev was not unbeaten, I would absolutely expect that finish to this match. But he's got the title. He's undefeated. I can't imagine they would be stupid enough to go with that distraction finish. So I would expect the Axel-Rusev match on Monday to be rather short. Triple H came out for a promo on Sting. You know, and this is where it really hit me here. They've got some big matches, some big hooks, I guess, for WrestleMania this year. Is The Undertaker going to come back? Sting wrestling his first match in a WWE ring. But you look at some of the top matches on this card, right? Look at three of the top matches on the show. It's Brock Lesnar defending the championship against Roman Reigns. Brock Lesnar rarely appears on Raw. You have The Undertaker against Bray Wyatt. We have not even seen The Undertaker on Raw. He may not even appear on Raw. And if he does, maybe once. And then you have Sting and Triple H. And Sting also never shows up on Raw. Who knows if he'll be on Raw between now and Mania. I would assume they will. They'll probably end up doing some kind of contract signing, maybe the week before, because they always wait until the last minute with these things. It'd be kind of funny if Sting changed his mind at the contract signing and says, I'm not interested. He went back to TNA. But I'm looking at three of the top matches here, each of which have a guy that just doesn't appear on television. And I think that is a big part of why this build to WrestleMania this year feels so flat. It's very hard to get people excited when three of your main events, you know, half of those matches aren't even on television. So you're left with segments like this where one guy has to come out every single week, whether it's Triple H or whether it's Bray Wyatt, and they just have to cut promo after promo after promo. Some of those promos might be really good, like this one I thought was. But how many times can we sit here and listen to a fucking promo? Show me some action. Show me a face-to-face. Get me excited. Get me interested in this match. Now, they've got, what, 3 weeks? 3.5 weeks, whatever it is, before WrestleMania? So there's plenty of time to get some of those guys on the show. But they got to do something. Because this build to WrestleMania, I'm not really feeling it right now. So Triple H is cutting a promo on Sting. Booker T had made a comment on commentary about how, you know, Triple H was politically responsible, maybe, for Sting not coming to WWE. It was something like that. And Triple H heard that comment, and he called Booker T into the ring. And when he did that, I had some horrible flashbacks to WrestleMania 19, as you might imagine. And Triple H is, you know, talking to him about what he thought. You know, Booker, I heard what you said, and I was politicking behind the scenes to make sure Sting never comes to WWE. Well, I mean, he was politicking behind the scenes, just not about Sting at that time. But Triple H talked about control for a little bit and how it was a funny thing. And he thanked Booker for his opinion. He thanked him for his time. And before Booker could head back to the announce desk, Triple H told him, oh, by the way, you're fired. So matter-of-factly, too. I'd like to think that maybe that's the way he broke the news to Bill DeMott. Triple H was a total dick here. It was quite great to watch. Booker could not believe it. He went to go gather his papers and leave. Triple H then stopped him and said, I'm only kidding, Booker. I'm only kidding. I just wanted you to know what real control felt like. Nice to see that things haven't changed much since 2003. I was just ecstatic when Triple H told Booker T that he was just messing around, because for a minute there, I thought they were taking Booker off TV and bringing Jerry Lawler back to Raw, so dodged a bullet on that one. Paige beat Nikki Bella by DQ when Brie interfered, saved the title for her sister. Diva Stopwatch was a big improvement this week. 6 minutes, 36 seconds, which is up from the whopping 30 seconds last week. Although it did run through a commercial break, but it's still 6.5 minutes. People were like, well, does it count? I'm like, what do you mean? People were tweeting me. Yeah, but there was a commercial break, so it was actually only like 3 minutes. No, the match never stopped. Even though we don't see it, they do continue to air the match on the app. You do realize that, right? And the people in the building are watching the match, too, just because it's such a selfish point of view. It's like, well, we didn't see it, so it didn't happen. No, the match never stopped. It was a 6.5-minute match, not a 3-minute match. I don't understand the logic behind that. I mean, I wouldn't have put a commercial break in there myself, but they did. But the match was still 6.5 minutes, which is an improvement. As Paige was being double-teamed afterwards, AJ Lee ran down to a massive pop, probably the biggest on the entire show. She's from New Jersey, so they were in New Jersey. Not that strange that she would get a big reaction. I like this. I like that they got more time. I thought the match was okay. The AJ return I thought was well done. That seems to set up either a tag team match or a four-way for the title at WrestleMania. The Daily Show with Seth Rollins. This was their spoof on Jon Stewart's show. They had a whole Daily Show mock set up in the middle of the ring, and Rollins was there flanked by J&J security. I was hoping he would go through a whole, like, string of horrible jokes, and that would kind of be the point of this, that people would boo his horrible jokes. He didn't really tell any jokes. He told one. And then Jon Stewart came out, My takeaway, by the way, when this segment was over, my big takeaway from this was, goddamn, I'm going to miss Jon Stewart when he leaves The Daily Show later this year. That is going to suck when he leaves, but he was great. Jon Stewart was on his A game. He came right from a taping of his own show, so he was probably still in announcer mode. He's just great. You know, he's a television guy, so it's not that surprising that he was very poised and he didn't seem nervous or out of place. Plus, he's a big WWE fan. So you take a guy that has, you know, a lot of experience daily being on television, sitting in front of a desk on camera, and he happens to be a WWE fan, and this is what you end up with. You end up with a great segment with a celebrity, not something where it seems forced, like they don't want to be there. He actually seemed like he was enjoying himself, and he was up on all the different stories, even if they scripted every last word for him. Like, the part I thought was really cool, and I had forgotten about this, but I thought it was a valid point to bring up, is that when Rollins won the Money in the Bank briefcase, he did so with help from Kane. Kane was in that match, and Kane had held the ladder steady for him, and he helped Rollins win the briefcase. Actually, I don't know if Kane was in the match. Either Kane may have been in it, or he came down to help Rollins, but either way, that was a point that I had forgotten about. Most people probably didn't even know, but he brought it up. Now, even if they scripted it for him, right? I mean, he delivered it in such a way where it wouldn't shock me if Jon Stewart actually did remember that. So I thought he was great. It looked like he was about to get his ass beat by Seth Rollins when Randy Orton's music hit. Orton, he didn't run out to the ring. They're still doing this whole thing where he's pretending to be Seth's friend, but he came out just to kind of see what was going on. And the music distracted Rollins long enough for Stewart to kick him in the nuts. That's that distraction nut kick I talked about earlier. Stewart actually went and threw an elbow at him, and then he wormed his way out of the ring and ran backstage. And Randy Orton just stood there like, hey, what happened? Daniel Bryan beat Luke Harper with the Yes Lock in a terrifying match where Daniel Bryan, a man who had his neck operated on less than a year ago, tried to commit suicide no less than 3 different times. Jesus Christ. I mean, that first throw early in the match by Harper, he just chucked Bryan out over the top rope into the floor. That looked like it sucked. And then the snake eyes where he lawn darted Bryan face first into the middle turnbuckle. There was a suplex in here. It may have been a German where Bryan landed right on top of his head and his neck. This was brutal. It made for a good match. It was definitely different than your average Raw match. It was very much hard-hitting. I cringed, though. Every time he took a bump, I just cringed. I just don't know that he should be doing stuff like that at all, let alone in a 5-minute match in the third hour of Raw. After the match, Barrett took his title back, and then Ambrose cut him off. Harper attacked Ambrose. R-Truth then took the title, and then he kindly surrendered it back to Luke Harper. He got laid out anyway. So then on his way to the back, Luke Harper has the Intercontinental title, but he gets nailed. He turns around into a Dolph Ziggler superkick, and Dolph Ziggler left in possession of the Intercontinental title. He also posed on top of a ladder with Daniel Bryan looking on. He was standing on top of the announce desk. So Bryan's a lock for that ladder match. It's confirmed now, and it looks like we'll get a taste of Bryan against Ziggler after all at WrestleMania. On SmackDown, Stardust was added to the mix, so it looks like he and probably Goldust are going to be added to the ladder match at Mania, which means no singles match between the Rhodes brothers. I guess that first match left such a bad taste in everybody's mouth that it scared them off from doing another one. See? That's why you should have saved the first match for WrestleMania. Now they've changed their mind. So that's very disappointing, actually. I thought that WrestleMania would be a nice place to blow off the feud, and they could do Cody against, you know, Cody and Goldie. I still feel like he ought to shed this Stardust stuff, you know, build to a more serious match with him and Goldust. And if that's it for Goldust, you know, what a great stage to go out on. It would have been WrestleMania. Maybe that still will be his last match. I guess we'll find out. The one positive I will say, if both of those guys are in the ladder match, and I don't even think they're going to do this. Maybe they'll mention it in passing. There's so many guys in this ladder match. You can't just focus on one or two. That's the problem. I don't know if there's going to be 8. I feel like there's 10 different guys who are going to be in this ladder match, and that's just way too many. But with Goldust, there is a story there in that Goldust has held the Intercontinental title 3 times before. It's been a long time since Goldust was Intercontinental champion. And it was actually that title, that kind of design of the Intercontinental title that I think most people remember him holding back in the mid-90s. There's a story there. If they really want to make this title feel important, where they could have Goldust talk about it and say, you know, it's my goal to once again be the Intercontinental Champion, and, you know, Stardust, Cody, whatever, I'm not going to let you take that away from me. I mean, there is a story there if they want to tell it. I just think there's so many guys in this match that, you know, to them it's just going to be an afterthought. Alundra Blaze, under that name, is being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Fan tweeted me after the announcement on Monday night and asked, who the F is that? That made me so sad when I read that. But, you know, she's been blackballed for so many years, and you have younger fans. I mean, in a way, it's like, why should they? Why should they know who this woman is? It's not their fault. It's not like Medusa gets talked about on television the way that Bruno Sammartino and Mick Foley and, you know, all those guys do. I don't think she's probably been mentioned a single time on television since she left the company. But it was still very sad. Paul Heyman came out for an angry promo. He was angry about something. I don't know if he was legit angry or if he just kind of worked himself up into a frenzy. This was a more intense version of Paul Heyman out there. He was taking no crap from anybody. His microphone was cutting out on him, and at one point he got handed one by Lillian Garcia, and he insulted her and said, it's about time you do something, and you do something right, because she was botching things left and right on the announcing, I think, at the last pay-per-view, actually. And Lillian, you know, Lillian will make mistakes actually quite often, so he called her out on it. And, you know, he's running down the names of all the big stars he mentioned the week before when he put over Roman Reigns. He practically filleted Roman Reigns on that microphone the week before. And he said not one of those guys refuted his claims on Twitter. Not Bruno, not Hogan, not Austin, not anybody. And some fan yelled out asking him, why not Andre? And Heyman, without even thinking, in the best line of the night, told the guy, yeah, I know I didn't include Andre because he's dead, stupid. Which is true. Andre's been dead, actually, for over 20 years. He also said Lesnar could Ronda Rousey Roman Reigns' ass at WrestleMania. That was in reference to Rousey beating her opponent in 14 seconds at UFC 184. That Ronda Rousey fight last weekend supposedly did at least 500,000 pay-per-view buys. That is insane. Insane. It was really a one-fight show. You know, Ronda Rousey fights are now good for at least 500,000 buys. Imagine if they put Rousey in there with Gina Carano. And meanwhile, it takes the fans starting an angry hashtag on Twitter to get WWE to give their women 5 extra minutes of television time. Who said women can't draw? Charlotte did an interview a while back and said that one day she is going to headline a WWE pay-per-view. That is her goal. She will headline a WWE pay-per-view in the main event. Headline. Good for her. I hope it happens. It won't happen under the old man, but Triple H loves her. He loves the Divas on NXT. Could it happen one day? Maybe on a B show? Sure. Why not? But this Heyman promo was just something to behold. You could find it. It's probably on their YouTube channel. I don't know if they edited it or not. I mean, he went on and on for a while longer, but just his intensity throughout the entire thing, it was just great. I mean, it was one of the best promos I've seen all year. Heyman will be sorely, sorely missed if Lesnar leaves and Heyman leaves with him. I would like to think that Heyman will stick around, or he'll be open to sticking around. They'll come up with something for him, whether he turns on, you know, Lesnar at WrestleMania or not. I guess will depend on whether or not Brock signs a contract, which is not looking too good right now. But if he leaves, I mean, there's going to be a big hole, I think, in WWE. I mean, he will be missed. And this segment right here is one of the reasons why. I mean, the guy is so freaking good. I don't see why you can't take this guy and put him with somebody else. I know it didn't work out well with Axel. It didn't work out well with Ryback. I don't know how much of that you can really lay on Heyman. It's in the booking. I mean, if they were pushing those guys strongly, they would have probably gotten over with that little extra help that Heyman would have given them. Because I don't think on their own, especially Axel on his own, some guys are just not meant to be main eventers. Some guys just don't have whatever that intangible quality is that gets the people behind them. They'll laugh at him when he does his goofy comedy stuff like he did on Monday night, but that's not going to get him over as a main eventer. But you take a guy like Paul Heyman to do the talking for him and talking about how, you know, giving us a reason why we should care about this guy, and then he's got a shot. That's where a manager, that's where a mouthpiece like a Paul Heyman could be so valuable. And I can't think of anybody else right now as good as he is in that role. You know, there are no Bobby Heenans anymore. There are no, you know, there's no Jim Cornette. it's Paul Heyman, and then everybody else is a distant second. And it's not like they're putting a great emphasis on managers. I know they have Lana, Zeb. I don't know where Zeb is. He may be gone. But managers are not what they used to be. And so if I'm WWE, I'm taking whatever money I have to take and throwing it at Paul Heyman no matter what happens with Brock, and I'm keeping this guy around because this guy right here, I mean, let's be honest. Paul Heyman is being wasted in WWE. He's got one guy that he manages. He's on tele. He's not even on television every week. I'm talking about Paul, not even Brock. We know that with Brock. But just think of how useful Paul Heyman could be in so many other ways beyond just being a character on television. I'm talking about creatively. I'm talking about other input. I don't really see any indication that Heyman is really involved in any of that stuff, or maybe he doesn't want to be. I would hope people at least ask him for their opinion. I know wrestlers will go up to him because he's talked about this before, and they'll ask him maybe to critique their match. What am I doing wrong? What am I doing right? I'm sure there's a lot of wrestlers who are probably doing that, but I'm talking about the company itself. You got a guy like Paul Heyman under contract. You better damn well take full advantage of that guy. And I feel like they aren't. And if they let him go, that'd be a big mistake. This was great. This was a great, great, great segment. I can't say enough good things about it. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins in the main event. Surprising lack of crowd enthusiasm for one half of your WrestleMania main event. Maybe not so surprising given that they were on the East Coast, but not a good sign. And you know what? You can't blame it on being late in the show because the previous match with Daniel Bryan, the fans were making a ton of noise. The thing with Reigns, here's the thing with Roman Reigns. He will sometimes get loudly booed when he comes out. Sometimes it'll be a mix of cheers and boos. By the end of his matches, he'll usually be cheered. I even saw it at the house show at MSG last week. He came out, he was booed. There were some cheers, but he was loudly booed. He was booed for a good part of the match. When he hit the spear on Rollins and got the pin at the end of the match that I saw, the people went crazy. So there's a pattern here with Roman Reigns matches. And part of that pattern is the middle. In the middle of the match, during the actual match, the fans just don't care. They don't give a shit. They did with Bryan. I will say that. With Bryan, they cared because Bryan is over. Bryan is over. He's a lot more over than Roman Reigns is. So they cared. And they knew they were getting a great match out of it. Well, Roman Reigns is in there with Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins, if he isn't the number one guy right now, he's right behind Bryan. He's certainly right there with Bryan as probably one of the best performers they have. He goes out there. He has great matches. So what's the excuse? The crowd was dead. You could hear a pin drop during this match. They just did not give a shit. They just are not into Roman Reigns matches the way they should be given his position on the card. That is a fact. And that has to be a concern when you're putting this guy in the main event of your biggest show of the year. You're going to give him a good 15, 20 minutes out there. How's the crowd going to react? It's a wild card. You don't know. He may be perfectly fine. You got people coming in from all over the world, families, kids. Or maybe it won't be fine. And maybe we'll have a situation that isn't quite like WrestleMania 20. But, you know, as Brock Lesnar would say, it could be ugly. It could be ugly out there, people. We just don't know. We don't know what we're going to get in that main event. So I think, you know, that's a problem. There's tons of interference here. J&J Security, the Authority. It was actually Randy Orton who had come out. He tripped Roman Reigns, caused the distraction roll-up finish with Rollins pinning Reigns. Yes, the main event ended with a distraction roll-up. Number 9 on the year, by the way. And it involved Roman Reigns, the man challenging for the championship. He is challenging the unbeatable Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, being pinned. Now, Randy Orton did help Rollins win. There was no indication that there was any turn coming, and as the Authority were walking away, Randy Orton did wink at somebody in the crowd. The camera picked up on it. That was no accident. We all know where this is going. That wink right there, it just reinforces my scenario that I proposed last week with the botched cash-in is the only one that makes any of this make any sense at all. Brock's going to be on the show Monday. He's supposed to be anyway. And he may be... Look, it doesn't even have to be this Monday. If Brock's going to be on another Raw 2 weeks from now, it could be on that show. But Brock is supposed to be there on Monday night. You have Rollins when nobody is expecting it. You do the cash-in, and it actually registers. The bell rings. This is the official cash-in. And Orton in some way costs Rollins the match. There is no greater revenge that Randy Orton can get on this man after what he has done to him, or any sense that could be made of this storyline and why he wouldn't just beat the fuck out of this guy, other than I want to cost him what is most dear to him, which is the briefcase, which this guy has been carrying around now for, what, 9 months? And for it to blow up in his face because of Randy Orton, that would add a lot of heat to that match, and that would actually make sense. I don't know if that's where they're going with this, but that's how I would do it. Otherwise, none of this makes any sense. Why Orton continues, why Orton insists on doing this unless he is mentally ill? There is no explanation for this. The finish to this match was pretty terrible, but to their credit, they turned it around after the match. Reigns went nuts. He did a suicide dive over the top rope, Undertaker style, took out all the bad guys. This reminded me of the dive that Undertaker did after his first match with Shawn Michaels at the Ground Zero show in 97. There's an obscure nerd reference for you. He then caught Seth Rollins coming off the top rope with a super spear that nearly broke the man in half. It looked awesome. And by the end, the crowd was into it. Yeah, this is how Roman Reigns should be booked. This is not hard. He goes out there, he beats the shit out of people, and he leaves. You give him spots, whether it's a big dive or a big spear or whatever. You know, put your brains together here. You got 20-some-odd people on that creative team. Put your brains together and come up with a list of 5 really cool-looking moves, 5 really cool-looking spots or situations that you can put this guy in between now and WrestleMania that guarantees every single week, even if he doesn't get that reaction when he first walks out, by the end, the people are going to be behind him and into him like they were here. This is exactly how Roman Reigns should be booked. Not in matches with the Big Show, where he gets pinned. Not in a match with Seth Rollins, where he gets rolled up and pinned. Or comes out and cuts corny promos. This is how you do it. They got it right here at the end of this show. And it worked. And you know, I don't know why you would want to pin the guy, even with tons of interference. I just don't understand that. But they did make up for it with the dive and with the spear. People are going to remember those two things. They're not going to remember the distraction roll-up. But like I said earlier, I'm really just, especially with this match, I'm not feeling the WrestleMania build at all. I'm just not, you know. I wanted Bryan and Brock. I freely admit that. If you asked me a month ago, 2 months ago, what's my fantasy main event for WrestleMania this year, it's Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan. I think that would have told a better story. It would have been a better match. And the fans would be more into these segments, I think. But they're doing what they can to get Roman Reigns over as this super destroyer. They've had Bryan go out there and endorse him. This week it was Heyman. Next week maybe it'll be Wiz Khalifa. Wiz Khalifa is apparently from Pittsburgh, so he's the hometown celebrity on Raw this Monday. Brock Lesnar is also scheduled for Pittsburgh this Monday, unless he decides to walk out again. Perhaps Wiz will be introduced to Brock. I wonder if Brock is a fan of Wiz's music. I'm going to take a wild guess and say no. Well, maybe he'll ask him. By the way, I've heard that, speaking of Brock, I've heard if UFC signs Lesnar, the plan is to do Lesnar and Frank Mir 3 at the end of the year at Madison Square Garden. You know, New York is like the only state left, I think, in the union that has not sanctioned mixed martial arts. Every year, Sheldon Silver, that piece of shit in the state assembly, he's the state assembly speaker, he wouldn't even allow a vote on legalizing MMA, even though it likely would have had enough votes to pass. The support was there. They could have passed this bill years ago. He wouldn't even allow it to go to a vote because he's got his own interests. He's got his own, he got the Culinary Workers Union and, you know, whatever, whoever's in his ear. He's got his own interests. He's not interested in, you know, bringing mixed martial arts to New York to bring extra money to New York. He's not interested in all the fans and the people who have been demanding it for years. He doesn't care. Wouldn't even allow a vote. Thankfully, this guy just got booted from office. He is likely headed for jail on corruption charges, that piece of garbage. So it looks like this may finally be the year that UFC is allowed to run New York. They've talked about running the Garden for years, and they finally have their chance. A Brock Lesnar main event for UFC's MSG debut, that would be huge. I don't know that I would go. If I'm not willing to pay the prices that they're putting for SummerSlam at the Barclays Center, I can only imagine the ticket prices they would charge for that. So I'm not saying I would be there, but boy, that would be one of the big pay-per-view events of the year. And it would be quite the insult to WWE, I think, for Brock to go back to UFC and be part of a show that has a legit shot, let's say, of doing 1 million buys when they never even came close. They brought Brock in. He was this big pay-per-view box office attraction. And he did, what, 150,000 buys on that first show, which actually for a B show at that time wasn't terrible. But that tells you right there the difference between UFC, WWE, and why WWE has killed their pay-per-view business, because it was already dying. They just decided to pull the plug and not let it suffer anymore. NXT ran its first ever live event in Ohio on Thursday. They were sold out in Columbus. This was the first of two shows in Ohio that were held in conjunction with the Arnold Classic that was in town this weekend. And this was no ordinary live event. This is supposed to be airing on the network, I believe, sometime next month, but I don't have a date. No spoilers here, but the matches that will be airing are Tyler Breeze against Kalisto, Charlotte, who had Ric Flair in her corner, against Bayley, the NXT Women's Champion Sasha Banks against Alexa Bliss, and the NXT Champion Kevin Owens against Alex Riley. I'm not sure if the latter two are title matches. They might be. But those are the matches that are supposed to actually air on the network. They did have what I read was an awesome match between Cesaro and Adrian Neville, but that is not part of the network broadcast. They're saving that for a Best of NXT DVD later this year. They also had a WWE Showcase match. This will not air, thank God, between Ryback and The Big Show. The Big Show on an NXT show. My heart sank when I read that. The fans were not happy to see him either. They booed. They chanted, "Please retire." In response, Big Show told the fans, "I've got 10 years left on my deal." God, I hope that isn't true. By the end, I heard from a few people who said the two of them actually won the crowd over, so good for them. But of all the main roster guys to bring in for an NXT house show match, you bring in The Big Show. Yeah, and it's not even like, well, he's an authority guy, so in storyline, Triple H brought him in. Triple H is a babyface on NXT. He comes out and he gets cheered. That's not a valid excuse. I don't want to see the name Big Show together with the letters NXT ever again. That is just dumb. I mean, seriously, the Big Show. What did you expect? What did you expect with the reaction that this guy got when he first came out? I mean, maybe that's what they wanted. They went for cheap heat. I don't know. It just seems silly to me that of all the people to send to an NXT show to work a match in front of those fans, you would send The Big Show. So NXT this week opened with a backstage segment with William Regal and Alex Riley. Alex Riley wanted badly for Regal to give him a match with Kevin Owens, and Regal made it very clear, you can't do both. You can't be a commentator and a wrestler. You got to make up your mind, choose one over the other. Good. Let him wrestle. Alex, you need to go back to wrestling. That's all I sat there thinking to myself. Please, for the love of God, I almost got that on my knees. Please go back to wrestling. I never thought that I would beg so badly for Alex Riley to go back to being a wrestler again. But if it gets him out of the announce booth, please, for the love of God. So Riley was going to contemplate this, and he walked off. The opening match was Tyler Breeze pinning Adam Rose with the beauty shot. Yes, Adam Rose, randomly, back on NXT. And he took most of the match, and then Breeze hit him with the kick out of nowhere and got the pin. I still think that's a weak finish for Breeze. His super kick is pretty sweet. I mean, maybe they think it's overplayed, but I still think that would be a better finish for him. Alexa Bliss, we had a little backstage segment with her talking about how she's been recovering from her nose injury, not only physically, but mentally. I guess it was a mentally exhausting nose injury that she suffered. You know, it's segments like this that will support the Bill DeMott folks who don't think that these men and women are tough enough. Blake and Murphy beat Angelo Dawkins and Sawyer Fulton, two members of the Shoot Nation, although they never acknowledged them under that name on TV. Dawkins and Fulton had the whole amateur wrestler get-up going on for him here. Fulton even had the headgear, a la Rick Steiner. Blake and Murphy won with a suplex frog splash combo that, while not exactly the same thing, it reminded me a lot of the old Power and Glory finish, which I think they are one of the most underrated teams in the history of that company. I think that is one of the most underrated finishes of a tag team in the history of that company. I'm pretty sure I talked about this in a mailbag question. Somebody asked me about that. Power and Glory, very underrated. I don't think they were together for very long. Again, two guys that were doing nothing. They put them together in a makeshift team, Paul Roma and Hercules. But they don't get enough attention, I don't think. Bayley was backstage with Charlotte. They talked for a little bit. Charlotte walked off to get ready for her main event. And Emma showed up, and Bayley asked Emma if she wants to go watch Charlotte's match with her, and the seeds of an Emma turn were planted here. She told Bayley that she too used to be all nice and bubbly, and then she got promoted to Raw, and now she's back on NXT, and look where it's gotten her. Baron Corbin beat Tony Briggs quickly with the End of Days, but that is not important. The real story here was Kevin Owens coming out. He trolled Alex Riley in the hardest possible way, stood behind him, just staring at him, lording over him, which obviously bothered Riley, almost taunting him in a way to react. And Owens very calmly grabbed Alex Riley's water bottle off the desk and took a sip, and then poured the bottle on top of Riley's head, which set him off. He got up in Owens' face, said he would kick his ass. Jason Albert did all he could to hold back Alex Riley. Alex is like, get off of me! And Owens then very casually turned his back as if to allow Riley a free shot if he wanted to take it, which he didn't. And he stood there for a little while longer, and he stood there, and he stood there, and he had this unbelievably smug look on his face, like, no? All right, well, I guess I'm done here then. And he walked off. I can't even begin to describe to you how awesome Owens was in this segment. He didn't really do anything, but if you pay attention, he did a lot. And I thought he was just freaking awesome. I mean, he has this character nailed. Absolutely nailed. He's become my favorite person now in NXT to watch. Just so smug throughout the entire thing. You just want to see him get punched in the mouth. Later on backstage, CJ Parker was in William Regal's office for who the hell knows what reason. When Alex Riley stormed in, he quit on the spot as a commentator, said, I am demanding a match with Kevin Owens. And at this point, I paused the feed for a moment to allow myself some time to celebrate the occasion. I did a cartwheel in my living room. I cracked open a window and the air suddenly smelled a little bit fresher than it normally does. And then I settled back in my chair, hit the play button to resume the feed. Nobody is happier than I am that Alex Riley is no longer on commentary for NXT. Or that it looks like he'll get his ass kicked. He'll be destroyed by Kevin Owens, which was my other wish from last week, if you remember. Although Riley doesn't bother me as much as a wrestler. It's as a commentator. As a commentator, I wanted to see Kevin Owens kill Alex Riley. As a wrestler, I still want him to kill him, I guess, but maybe not as much. Maybe just put him in the hospital, that's all. Don't kill the guy. But I have to say, you know, I thought Alex Riley was awesome here. I thought he showed great fire. He was believable. He wanted the match right away. William Regal denied it and said he needs to make sure Riley is ready first. Even CJ Parker. CJ Parker had a great line in this segment when he said that he was the only one to do anything to Kevin Owens since he came to NXT. He pointed out the scar on Kevin Owens' nose, the bridge of his nose from that first match he had at TakeOver when Parker broke it. Riley said, fine, next week, I'll just kick your ass instead. And so we now have an Alex Riley-CJ Parker match set up for next week. A segment here with great performances by Alex Riley and CJ Parker. I must be dreaming. I never thought I would see the day, but it was. I have to give both of them their props. We got cell phone video of Sami Zayn walking the streets of Montreal at 2 a.m. He said he hasn't watched back the tape of what Kevin Owens did to him at TakeOver, but he's coming for Kevin Owens. Solomon Crowe made his in-ring debut in a match against Bull Dempsey. Dempsey took a good portion of it until he missed the diving headbutt off the top rope, and Crowe won with this move where he sort of ricochets his body weight off the ropes and then down onto his opponent for a splash. I wasn't impressed by what I saw here. I didn't see a lot of Sami Callihan's work on the indies beforehand. Like, I knew of him and I saw some of his matches, but I'm not like a big... Oh, Sami Callihan, I can't wait until he makes his NXT debut. Maybe if I saw more of his work, I'd have a different tune. All I know is that what I've seen so far, which is just the one match, and even when he, you know, debuted and he attacked Parker and all that kind of stuff, I'm not impressed. You know, so far he's not doing it for me. He's not representing the Solomon name well. I'm going to give him time, though. This is only his first match. We'll see how it goes. Kevin Owens and Finn Balor is official for the NXT Championship on the March 25th show, which I believe has already been taped, so I cannot wait for that. Main event was Sasha Banks and Charlotte for the NXT Women's Championship. This is the first time I can ever remember them giving the main event spot to the women, and they delivered. People bought it as a main event. They weren't catcalling or sitting on their hands or anything like that. They were into this match as a believable main event, as believable as anything the men would do. It was a nice feeling. Charlotte tried for natural selection off the top rope, but Sasha held onto the ropes and then rolled up Charlotte with her feet on the ropes for the finish, like any good heel would do, and she retained her championship. I didn't time it. I should have done a stopwatch. I mean, this thing, if it didn't go 10 minutes, it came pretty close. So they gave it some time. Good back and forth, some good near falls. I don't have to describe it. Just watch the freaking thing. Don't take my word for it. You should already be watching this. You don't need me to give you the play-by-play. But Sasha retains, and Charlotte, of course, she didn't cry. She didn't pull a Natalya where she cries after every loss, but she did not look happy. And they went off the air. So another fine episode of NXT. This show just keeps clicking. It's firing on all cylinders every single week. Looking forward to Balor and Owens on the 25th. I'll try to find out more about when that Columbus show is going to air. Again, everything I've read indicates that it was taped to air on the network. It's just a matter of when. And again, I don't think it'll be until next month, but that sounds like it will be a fun show to watch. It's fun, the idea that they could take NXT on the road, and so, as fun as Full Sail is, the ability to go on the road and put that product in different venues in front of different crowds is very appealing. And I see online people saying they should bring NXT to the Hammerstein Ballroom. I was the first person to say that. I said that months and months ago, that NXT should absolutely run a show at the Hammerstein Ballroom. You know, NXT would be very popular on the East Coast. Look at who they have on that roster. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, you know, even Finn Balor. I mean, Finn Balor didn't, but guys like Owens and Zayn, you know, made their name up and down the East Coast, working for Ring of Honor in New York and in Philly and Boston and all those places. You throw in names like Itami and Balor, I mean, the fans in New York are going to know who they are. Just with those guys alone, you'll sell out. I mean, it's an easy sellout. If they're selling out a slightly smaller building, let's say in Columbus, Ohio, to pack 2,000 people or 2,500 people into the Hammerstein Ballroom, piece of cake. And it would be an incredible atmosphere, and selfishly, I would get to go. So I hope it happens at some point. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, People. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt. The next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff and get your shirt right now. Samoa Joe made his Ring of Honor return at their pay-per-view last weekend. He said the ROH title was the most coveted title he had ever had around his waist, which is a third-degree burn to TNA, whether he intended it that way or not. He said he would fight whoever the champion was after the main event, which was still Jay Briscoe. And that match is going to happen. It's going to happen on their WrestleMania weekend show in Redwood City, California. Why not the next pay-per-view in June? Because it looks like Joe is WWE bound. So says Dave Meltzer. Not sure when he might debut there. I don't know what capacity, if it's going to be exclusively NXT, if it's going to be as a trainer or a wrestler. I mean, I would think a wrestler, but who the hell knows? But apparently he is WWE bound. But I said last week, if they have any plans of promoting Finn Balor and Adrian Neville, or any combination of what I call the NXT 5 to the main roster, they're going to have a gaping hole to fill. And Samoa Joe would fill that hole very nicely. The people would eat that shit up. So it makes sense. You know, somebody is getting promoted soon. It could be Balor. It could be the night after WrestleMania. Whoever it is, one guy, two guys, Joe would absolutely make sense as a replacement there. Now, would they put Joe on the main roster? Would they put him on the main roster quickly? That I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But this is not terribly surprising to me. And I'd like to see Joe get a shot in WWE. Let's see how he does with it. As long as he gets a fair shake. You know, forget what he looks like. Forget his TNA past. I know he spent almost 10 years there, and that's probably a knock on him. It's not like they've gone after really any other homegrown TNA talent, if you think about it. I mean, they've picked guys back up who were in TNA, but before that, they were in WWE. And they didn't spend nearly as much time in TNA as Joe did. If they actually did bring in Joe and then they actually bring him to the main roster, it would be a first. But Joe is, Joe's not any ordinary talent. Let's see what they do with him. Mike Johnson, I have to mention this, at PW Insider, had a very good write-up. It was actually just a paragraph as part of a news item on the website. But I thought it was a very valid one in that his message to TNA is to get the hell off Fridays. as soon as possible. Because being on Friday nights is killing TNA. It's one of the things, anyway, that's killing TNA. I agree with him 100%. And I knew that was going to happen because we all said it. You know, Friday night is not a good night. It is one of the worst nights of the week for television. I know SmackDown was on Fridays for years. And towards the end, when they moved SmackDown back to Thursdays, it was actually doing pretty damn well. There were some weeks where SmackDown would get over 3 million viewers. I don't know how, but they were. I don't think they've even been at that level since they moved SmackDown back to Thursdays. But Friday night, generally speaking, is not a good night. Now, SmackDown was on the air for a long, long time. It was an established show on a much, much better network. Sci-Fi is a much better network than Destination America. And we're not even talking just in terms of the number of homes that it's in terms of its position kind of on that, you know, cable channel schedule. You know, Sci-Fi is a much more prominently featured network than Destination America is. Destination America, there's a reason I called it Destination DVR. And the funny thing about that is my DVR decided on its own this week to simply not record Impact. I have no idea why. Maybe it's trying to tell me something. But I did end up watching the show online, and I'll talk about it here in a second. But the Friday night thing is one of the things that's killing this company. TNA has no buzz right now. And it doesn't help that they tape weeks and weeks and weeks of television ahead of time. Lucha Underground does too, but the thing with Lucha Underground is so different. It is a different kind of product, and it's fun. And there is a buzz around Lucha Underground, especially if you've got big-name talent like Del Rio and Rey Mysterio may go there. It seems like the place to be right now, other than NXT. NXT also has that vibe. But so does Lucha Underground. TNA has no vibe right now. There is no vibe that, well, TNA is the place to be. It doesn't. And I went to an indie show the other night, and there's EC3 playing the EC3 character that he established in TNA. And to TNA's credit, were it not for them pushing him, he wouldn't be the star that he is right now. You know, Ethan Carter III, one of the few young guys that TNA has really established, and I think he could take that gimmick elsewhere and probably get over pretty well with it. And they gave him a shot that WWE didn't. WWE cut Derek Bateman. They didn't give him a shot. TNA did. And they deserve credit for that. But examples of that are few and far between. I'm at an indie show the other night watching EC3 wrestle in front of 150 people. Why does he even have to do that? House of Hardcore. Tommy Dreamer has a show the other night, and you've got Eric Young and EC3 together on that show. And you've got, I think, not the Wolves. Oh, my gosh. Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode and Austin Aries together in the main event. I'm looking at images from this show. I didn't see it, but I'm looking at still shots, and I see all these TNA guys on the show, and I'm like, is this TNA or is this House of Hardcore? Because it sounds like a fun show, and people were into it. Even Tommy Dreamer's promotion has a buzz about it. And they've got half the TNA roster on those cards at this point because they have to work. I said that earlier. You know, if a lot of these guys get paid per appearance, and I don't know that the bigger names like EC3 and Bobby Roode, I'm sure they have a contract, they have a salary, they make a certain amount of money. But there are a ton of guys who only get paid when they appear. If TNA's not running any house shows, which they're not, they're out of the house show business, how are these guys supposed to make money unless they work elsewhere? But the point of all this is I'm looking at these different indie shows that have all these TNA names on it. They have more of a buzz than TNA does, and they're using TNA's own stars. That's a bad sign. And being on Friday night, look at the ratings pattern. They started kind of strong. They were building those first 2-3 weeks. The numbers went up a little bit and up a little bit and up a little bit. I think the high water mark for them so far on Destination DVR is 550, maybe 550,000 viewers, somewhere in that range. I don't think they cracked 600 yet. And over the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's gone down and down and down and down. The numbers are trending downward to the point now where the ratings for Impact is in the 0.2 to 0.3 range. Back when they were on Spike, they were averaging about 1 million viewers per episode. So they were getting their 1.0, 1.1. Some weeks it maybe was an 0.8 or an 0.9. But they were usually right around that 1.0. And the funny thing is now when I see websites reporting on ratings for Impact, they don't use figures like that anymore. They give you the raw figure, you know, 400,000 people watch the show, 500,000 people watch the show. It's very hard. You have to search around for it. But it's very hard to get the actual rating. When you look at the actual rating, and it's staring you in the face, and it's an 0.2 or an 0.3, that really drives home how bad things have gotten. I mean, how much lower can they go? Destination America, I'm sure, is probably happy with it. It's not like their shows are really doing much better. TNA is just, it's there. They're existing. It doesn't feel like they're growing. It just feels like they're trying to get to that next thing. You know, TNA, in a lot of ways, TNA's kind of like a person in an old age home or a person in hospice. That's kind of where TNA is right now, right? They're just hoping to wake up in the morning and get to the next day. They're in a situation where they're not growing. They're not getting better. They're not really feeling any better. They go about their day. You know, they don't have any friends. They're kind of there by themselves. Nobody's talking about them. And every day they wake up and they're breathing and their heart is beating and their eyes open is a good day. And that's kind of the story of TNA right now. Are they growing? Are they getting better? Not really. The numbers certainly don't bear that out. And if they get to the next day, if they can just coast along and survive, then to them, that's a success. And I guess it is because it keeps people employed. But for how much longer can this go on for? They've got to, at some point, exhibit some sort of growth or a desire to grow and get better. And I know Dixie Carter talking about how this is going to be a great deal for us because on Destination America, we'll finally have more than just the 2 hours of Impact. We'll have, you know, another show on Saturdays, and we'll have, you know, marathons of all these clip shows with the best of TNA. That's all well and good. And in theory, when you run those shows, you can also promote Impact. So that's more advertising for the main show. It's not doing them a lot of good. Obviously, the numbers are trending down. And it's not like the numbers were already back at the levels they were before. They're never again going to be at that million mark. I mean, those days are done. And think of all the years they struggled to get above that number. Because they were always right around that million. And it was always like, man, we're not growing. We got to get that to like 1.5. Just the million now is a pipe dream. It's never going to happen. So it's kind of depressing when you really think about it. And when my DVR didn't tape Impact, and I thought to myself, well, if I don't watch Impact this week, because I missed it the week before, I just didn't have time. That's 2 weeks in a row. And I know exactly what's going to happen. If I allow myself to not watch this show 2 weeks in a row, that it's going to be very easy not to watch it for 3 weeks and 4 weeks, and I'm just going to stop watching. And I don't want to just stop watching. I know there are people who are big TNA fans who enjoy the reviews, and it's not like this is even the worst, you know, creatively, the worst time in TNA's existence. They got Dixie Carter the hell off television. They've actually kept her off television. I'm very proud of them for doing that, because I thought by now she'd be back. And it's, you know, the product itself, it's not bad. You know, there's some good stuff, and they got some real talented guys on there. God knows the TNA product has been far worse at other points in the past. So this is not the lowest they've ever been. But I would say this is the lowest TNA's ever been in terms of general apathy towards the product. There is just no buzz. Everything I hear is either about NXT, it's about Lucha Underground, it's about House of Hardcore, it's about New Japan Pro Wrestling, and there's just nothing about TNA. And I don't know, but I think Mike Johnson's point about getting off Fridays would help, and I don't know what that magic night of the week is, if it's Tuesday, if it's Wednesday. I mean, you want to stay away from Thursday and SmackDown, obviously, so your options are kind of limited. You're not going to go Mondays. I guess Tuesdays or Wednesdays would really be the option, and on Wednesdays, you're up against Lucha Underground and NXT, for the people who insist on watching NXT the day that it premieres, because I know it's on demand, but I guess Tuesday. There's no other wrestling right now on Tuesday, right? Main Event, I guess. Is Main Event even back on the network? I haven't even checked. But it's not all bad with TNA. Like I said, the actual product itself, you know, there's a few different things that I enjoyed on this show. You know, the show opened with a Beatdown Clan promo that was interrupted by Drew Galloway. It's nice to see Galloway getting a chance to, you know, be something more than just a background comedy figure like he was in WWE. I saw a lot of praise online for his promo here. I don't know, this promo didn't really do anything for me. It was kind of pandering and really just didn't make a lot of sense in the context of things. So the Beatdown Clan was very upset with Galloway, who helped Bobby Lashley beat MVP last week. That was the show that I missed. So Galloway showed up in the crowd and he cut a promo on sports entertainment, saying, you know, the fans are here for pro wrestling, not that other stuff. He said he was in TNA to be the voice of those whose voices are not being heard. So again, he's the voice of the voiceless. And he had some fans say their name into the microphone. You know, what's your name? What's your name? He was trying to make a point that these people were not being heard. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, you know, is he cutting a promo on Vince McMahon? Or is he cutting a promo on the Beatdown Clan? Because this didn't really make any sense in the context of the segment. It really hit me here how many guys have left WWE and really hate that company. Or at least they hate the politics and the people that are in charge. Galloway, Justin Gabriel, Del Rio, Mysterio, Punk, even Justin Roberts. Justin Roberts was on that House of Hardcore show last night and called Monday Night Raw trash. He referred to the trash that we see on Monday nights. You know, now I'm sure some of it is bitterness, but I don't think that would be fair to just lump everybody together and say, well, they're all just a bunch of bitter ex-employees. Yeah, there's an atmosphere that has been created in WWE that people clearly are not happy with. It's just that now, as these guys start to realize that there is money to be made outside the WWE bubble, and there are other places to work, it's okay to speak up about it. So, I don't know. But anyway, to go back to the segment, though, I just don't know that what Galloway was saying. Like, this would have been a good promo, I guess, if he would have just come out on his own in the middle of the ring and cut a promo explaining why he's now in TNA. Then this would have been perfectly acceptable. This would have been absolutely fine. But in the context of what this segment was about, and it was him jawjacking with the Beatdown Clan, the lead heel faction, I don't see how any of this made any sense at all. But the people ate it up because they were in the UK, and he's from, you know, he's from the UK, and so they were into it. And Kenny King challenged him to a match without the Beatdown Clan brothers at ringside, and so, of course, as soon as the match started, what happened? The Beatdown Clan attacked Drew Galloway. They had a match. Galloway won with the Future Shock DDT, and then he retreated into the crowd before the Beatdown Clan could attack him. So this was good. Bram beat Matt Hardy with an in-plan DDT he is now calling the Brighter Side of Suffering. It's funny, that was the title I use in my notes for this week's mostly positive Raw review. Bram tried to kill Hardy with a wrench after the match when Magnus made the save. We have not seen Magnus since he got laid out with a cue ball to the back of the head in an alley somewhere by Bram. And then, of course, Bram had that segment with Magnus's wife, Mickey James, a few weeks ago. So Magnus came out, he got a nice reaction being in the UK and all, and then he cut a promo promising to spill Bram's blood in the hallowed ground of England. Got a promo segment with Rockstar Spud in the ring with EC3. They set up a hair versus hair match between them next week. Taryn Terrell beat Awesome Kong by DQ to retain her Knockouts title after Kong kept stomping on Terrell by the ropes. She shoved Earl Hebner aside, and that was enough for the DQ. And Kong then killed her on the floor, went for an implant buster when Gail Kim made the save. And Gail Kim and Awesome Kong brawl to the back. I don't know that they can have the kind of matches they had in TNA even 7 years ago, but I look forward to them reprising their feud. That was one of the highlights of TNA back in the day. The Wolves regained their TNA tag team titles, beating James Storm and Abyss. Tons of interference from members of the Revolution, Manic, Koya. Abyss later tried to use a cowbell as a weapon when Matt Hardy ran in, gave him a twist of fate, followed by a double foot stomp to the back of the head by Eddie Edwards, and a double foot stomp to the guts by Davey Richards for the pin. And here is where taping TV so far in advance comes back to bite them. Eddie Edwards broke his heel in a singles match with Davey Richards that was taped a few weeks ago for one of their one-night-only shows. I think he may have had surgery on it already. It was a pretty serious injury. So, you know, I suppose as infrequently as TNA tapes its television, it's possible they could just keep the titles on them without saying anything, and Edwards could just come back a little early and work, you know, work around it. But it's a serious enough injury, he probably should not be doing that. So even though they just won the titles here, they may be losing them just as quickly. I guess we'll see what TNA decides to do. Before the main event three-way between Kurt Angle, Bobby Roode, and Eric Young to determine the number one contender to Lashley's TNA title, Destination America aired a promo promoting a match between Lashley and Kurt Angle for the championship. Idiots. How does something like that even happen? What a bunch of morons. Well, you'll be shocked to learn in the main event, Kurt Angle beat Bobby Roode and Eric Young to become the number one contender for the TNA World title. I didn't see that one coming. This was a good match. None of the matches on the show were particularly long, even this one. I don't think even went 10 minutes. But it was good. EY was on the outside. He had a chair. and with his back turned, so you got to picture it. Eric Young has his back turned to the ring, has a chair in his hands. He kind of reaches up with it over his own head and whacks Bobby Roode in the head with the chair. That allowed Kurt Angle, who did not see what happened, to catch Bobby Roode and give him an angle slam for the pin. So there may be a story there that will be built up between Kurt Angle and Bobby Roode, although they were cool with each other when the match was over. They embraced, everything seemed to be okay. Angle hugged him, Roode didn't go after him, so we'll see. Lashley came out for a stare down with Angle, and that was it. That was Impact. I may have missed the announcement of when the match will be at the very end. I know Josh Matthews did not say, next week. So I don't know if the match between Angle and Lashley is next week or the week after, but it's coming up. And that will be for the championship. Lucha Underground, episode 17 this past week. Before we get into the Lucha Underground review for the show, which was good, I enjoyed it. Conan was on MLW Radio. And you remember Vince Russo appeared at Lucha Underground, not on camera, thank Christ, but he was there as a guest. He is a big fan, apparently, of Lucha Underground, which should give anybody listening to this podcast right now a queasy feeling in their stomach. So he was there for a day or two, and again, he denied all the reports. Dave Meltzer and all these dirt sheet writers, I am not there to talk to the people at Lucha Underground and get a job. Well, Conan was on MLW Radio last week, I think, and he says that while Vince Russo was there at the Lucha Underground tapings, Russo came up to him and he tried to convince him to give China a job in Lucha Underground. And Conan said he laughed and said he didn't even bother telling anybody the story before he told it here. He didn't tell any of the executives or writers or anything. He told Russo that she would not fit in on the show. Which, actually, for a show that has midgets and transvestite wrestlers, I don't know. I think China actually would probably fit in quite well, to be honest with you. But, you know, I get that China is a friend of Vince Russo's. He cares about her. She's my friend. And so, to him, he's looking out for a friend. But that's exactly why this guy needs to be kept as far away from this product as possible. And you know what? Being around the wrestling business is probably the worst thing China could be doing right now. If she has issues to deal with, and she seems to be, you know, doing okay, she's living over in Japan, she's moved on from wrestling and porn and all that kind of stuff. If she has issues that need to be dealt with, I don't think being in the wrestling business is the answer. So I don't think Vince Russo is doing his friend any favors by making that kind of recommendation. But again, that's exactly why Russo needs to stay the fuck away from Lucha Underground. Don't start planting ideas in people's heads. Mil Muertes beat Phoenix with the flatliner in the opening match. Katrina had come out, and Mil directed her to give Phoenix the lick of death after the match. She refused, and so Mil did what any sane, rational man would do to a woman who says no to them. He grabbed her by the throat, dragged her into the ring, and threw her hard into the corner. In the process, she dropped the stone that she has been carrying around, which is supposedly from the rubble of the earthquake that Mil survived when he was a young boy. Phoenix picked up the stone and nailed Muertes with it, knocked him out. Katrina then gave Mil the lick of death, but started from his belly button and licked him all the way up to his face. God damn, this woman. Hold on, I need a minute here. Okay, I'm good. She then kissed Phoenix and the two made out in the ring. I'm not sure who's the heel and who's the babyface here, but I don't care, as long as we get to see more of Katrina. I kind of look at Mil Muertes as the Matt Hardy in this equation. Katrina is Lita, and Phoenix is Edge. So it's a good thing Mil doesn't have a Twitter account. In Dario Cueto's office, he made a future match between Ivelisse and Angelico. I'm calling him Angelico because the announcers did. I kept calling him Angelico, thinking I was pronouncing it the proper way. At this point, I don't give a fuck. They called him Angelico, I'm calling him Angelico. This time, though, they would meet with Son of Havoc as the guest referee. Elsewhere, Alberto El Patron tells Prince Puma that he is coming for his Lucha Underground title. We then had a match between Big Rick and Sexy Star. Talk about a mismatch. Wasn't really much of a match. She went right after Rick. Rick really didn't want to hit a woman. And in the end, he simply took his two hands and put them on her shoulders and held her shoulders down on the mat and pinned her. Which is kind of smart, because there's no way she's kicking out of that. So he won the match. The objective here is that Dario Cueto made this match. He put the two of them in the ring together because they both have issues with the crew.
Bale and Cortez Castro and Mr. Sisko, and they both want the crew in the worst way, but only one of them can get them, and so he put him in a match. Rick won, so he gets the crew. The crew came out, they attacked Big Rick, they laid out Sexy Star, Rick fought back, and the crew bailed, and that's how the segment ended. We had a great video package on Alberto, hyping up his family lineage, his time in America, and how he was stabbed in the back there, his return to Mexico, winning the AAA Mega Heavyweight title, and then finally his debut in Lucha Underground and that big reaction he got. This really made him feel like a big deal, much bigger than he ever felt in WWE. So the main event was El Patron against Tejano. They had a long, long match, ended with Tejano attempting to use his bull rope on Alberto, but Alberto gained possession of it, and he started whipping the crap out of him with his own bull rope for the DQ. The DQ was lame, but, you know, it worked here because this was the first in what I am sure will be multiple matches between them going forward. And this was Del Rio's revenge after being whipped like a dog with the bull rope by Tejano a couple of weeks ago when he made his debut. Show ended with a backstage segment in Dario Cueto's office. He was speaking with a mystery luchador, donning a cowboy hat. His face was obscured, but as they spoke, I realized it was the Deerhead dude, King Cuerno. He then spoke, very good English too, I might add, saying that he was going to beat Johnny Mundo inside the steel cage and would mount his head on Cueto's wall. So I guess it's Mundo and Cuerno next week in a cage match, the first one ever on Lucha Underground. Another good show. I probably enjoyed NXT more this week. I always compare the two. I really shouldn't, but to me, consistently, NXT and Lucha Underground are the two best wrestling shows on television every single week. So it's only natural that I would probably compare the two, but this was good. Mailbag, let's get to some of your questions here before we wrap things up. Please include your name and where you are from, and also just be aware, I am unbelievably backlogged, so I may not be able to respond to you at all if you send me an email, but I do see everything that you guys send me, and I shall do my best over the next few weeks to try to go through everything. But please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We actually have an audio question to open up the mailbag here this week. It's from Wes, who is now living in Greenville, South Carolina, and who recently wrapped up active duty service in the Army out of Fort Lewis.
In your opinion, knowing that Vince really loves his brand of sports entertainment, why do you think that Vince McMahon really wants to stick to that idea of sports entertainment? And why do you think he adamantly wants it to be part of his legacy that he leaves behind?
Well, I think it's because he genuinely hates pro wrestling. Or as he always calls it, wrestling. You'll notice that. He may have also done that in the interview with Austin. But every time I've heard Vince pressed on that, or somebody mentions pro wrestling or asks him about it, he always has to call it pro wrestling. Like, he still thinks about it like Ted Turner used to, you know, wrestling. I'm in the wrestling business. And Vince would say, well, I'm in the sports entertainment business. It's, oh, God, make me want to gag. You're in the same fucking business, dude. He's just in denial. But I think he hates it so much and what it represents. He's ashamed of it. He's ashamed of wrestling. He doesn't want to be remembered as a wrestling promoter. I think Vince wants to be this all-encompassing great promoter of all things entertainment. That's why every chance he gets, you know, we're the best thing in entertainment. We're in entertainment. We're in the entertainment business. We're not the same as TNA. We're not the same as UFC. What they do is different. And in some ways, yes, but at your core, you're really not all that different. No matter how hard he may try to convince himself of that, we all know that. I mean, it's comical to think, like, one day we will live in a world where somebody will say to their friend, hey, you want to go see sports entertainment at the arena tonight? Like, nobody will say that. Absolutely nobody, not one single person in the entire fucking world will ever say that, ever. They will say, do you want to go to the wrestling show? Or they'll just say, hey, WWE's in town, you want to go see it? But this sports entertainment label, it's something he came up with years and years ago, and part of it may have been, you know, the tax implications of essentially admitting that you were staged entertainment, it saved them money. That was probably the biggest reason why. But you could find, you know, mentions of sports entertainment going back even to the mid-80s on WWE. It wasn't like just something that they created to avoid having to pay tax money in some states. You know, it's just he wanted to be more than pro wrestling. You could see it in the way that he booked the product when he took over from his father in the late 80s and the early 90s, which is a period that a lot of us, myself included, look back on fondly and very nostalgic about. But look at all the goofy characters, right? I mean, it was a complete departure from what wrestling had been. But you still had a ring, right, with four sides and ropes and a referee, and it's a staged athletic competition. It is what it is. You want to get rid of wrestling? Be my guest. It's his company. He can do whatever he wants to. But don't call yourself World Wrestling Entertainment if that's the case. I think it drives Vince McMahon nuts that the word wrestle is in WrestleMania. And if he had his way, he would change it. But he can't because it's such an established name. Now, he may think that, well, WrestleMania 31 sounds like WrestleMania is old, so we're not going to have numbers anymore. We're not going to have Roman numerals. We'll just have a play button. Or for the state of Texas next year, we'll have a star in the logo. I think that's dumb, too. But I just think it must drive him fucking nuts that the word wrestle is in WrestleMania and there's nothing he can do about it. And I was actually joking about this. I had a conversation with Noah Mark the other day. By the way, big ups to Noah Mark with his help on the intro this week. But I was having a conversation with him, and I made this comment to him, and I honestly believe it. You'll notice when Vince McMahon will do promos, even to this day, but even in his younger days, he would always speed through the initials. So when he says WWE, he has a tendency to go WWE, right? It almost sounds like he's saying WE. And my theory on that is this. He hates so much that the word wrestling is still in the name of his company, World Wrestling Entertainment, that whether it's conscious or subconscious on his part, when he says the initials, he rushes through them, but it's on purpose. Because he can't bring himself to say WWE, so he says WWE. So to him, it's World Entertainment, and he just cuts the wrestling out. That's why when he says that and he speeds through it, now you know why. But anyway, to go back to your question, I just think... it's two things. He's ashamed of it. He's not a fan of wrestling, actual pro wrestling. And he envisions himself as being this just all-encompassing entertainment promoter. And to say you're a wrestling promoter is an insult to him. Because to him, it's so much more than wrestling. Look at what we do. Look at all the things that we're involved in. We make movies. We tell stories. So it's almost like an insult to him when you say that. This audio question comes to us from Jason in the Bronx.
What's up, Solid Monster? My question today is about second and third generation wrestlers and what we've come to expect from them. I feel like Randy Orton is one of the best in-ring talents I've ever seen, but that's because I feel he has natural born talent to do it. The same goes for The Rock and others that we've seen in the ring, Natalya. So my question is, what is it that we're missing with a guy like Curtis Axel? I mean, we know his lineage. We know where he comes from. So what are your thoughts on that? And what do you think he needs to be doing that he's not doing?
I was just talking about Axel a little earlier on, and I made the comment that not everybody is cut out to be a main eventer. And I think that applies here with him. Now, that doesn't mean that he doesn't have any value and he can't be a solid... contributor, a solid mid-card guy in that roster. I think he could be, and I think what we're seeing from him now with this new gimmick, even though it's all goofy comedy, is that he does have a place on the roster, and I think he does have a place as more, at some point, as more than just a comedy figure. I could see him, solidly at that intercontinental level. Had he been getting a push right now, he would even be, I think, in that match, that ladder match at WrestleMania. He could be at that level. Some guys are just not destined to be headliners, and I don't know that I look at Curtis Axel and I see a guy who is main event material. I mean, they sent him down to NXT like they sent other guys like Tyson Kidd, who had incredible matches, and they sent Axel to NXT, had one match there, didn't impress me at all. I know he's had good matches in the past. I've heard about some of them. I haven't seen them all. But, I mean, you're talking about a very small group of guys at the very top. I mean, think about it. Any given moment, how many real, true main event top guys are there in WWE? Five? Maybe six? Now, think of all the people they have under contract in that company. Think of all the people they have waiting in the wings in developmental. Think about all the people in the wrestling industry. Think of all the people who are training and trying to break in to become a wrestler. And in the number one company in the world, in that very elite top class, you've got five or six guys. Not everybody who had a dad or a mom or a cousin or somebody in the business who's second generation or third generation is going to be the next Randy Orton or is going to be the next Rock. Look what happened with Manu. Right? What was he? Office son, I think. I think that was the relationship. Anyway, he was brought in and he was part of Legacy for a cup of coffee and then he was gone. Right? Some guys, it just doesn't work out. Axel, I think, is a guy who could be a solid mid to lower card guy, but it's not like they haven't given him chances before. You could say they didn't go all the way with him and Heyman. I agree. I think there was more to be done there. But he's had chances before. The fans just aren't into him. They are now, but he's making an ass out of himself. I think he's better than that, but I don't see him as being on the main event level at all, ever. I just don't see it. And why? I don't know. You know, personality probably has as much to do with it as anything. I mean, his work is okay. You can be a decent or just a good worker without being a great worker, but make up for it in other ways. I don't think anybody would ever mistake The Rock as being a great wrestler, a great master technician, or as Steve Austin would say, a great mechanic in the ring, but he more than made up for it in charisma, in personality. I don't look at Curtis Axel and think, wow, this guy's got a ton of charisma. I think that maybe is one of the biggest things. His promos and charisma are lacking, and his in-ring work and all the other attributes are not enough to make up for it, and so what you're left with is, you know, a decent hand. That's how I look at it anyway. As a fan on the outside looking in, I see Curtis Axel. That's what I see. Sam Bishop from Wales. Could you see Seth Rollins pulling double duty at WrestleMania by facing Randy Orton? And then after Brock and Reigns come out before the match, Rollins' music hits and he adds himself to the main event using the briefcase. At least if this happens, it will make the match much more watchable and would not be as predictable as Rollins waiting until afterwards to cash in. Could I see it happening? Yeah, anything's possible. Do I expect it to happen? No. No, I still expect that Rollins will probably lose to Randy Orton, and then he will come back and he will cash in either during the match, because that could happen too. That's never happened before. In the middle of a main event match, somebody cashes in the middle of that match and then is added to it. I think if he gets added to the main event, there's a better chance it happens that way. When these guys are spent, they've already been out there for 15 minutes, they're sucking wind, they're both beaten down, and then, while the match is still in progress, I could see Rollins maybe cashing in and turning it into a three-way in the final 5 minutes. Or he'll just cash in afterwards. I think it's one or the other. Tony from Philadelphia, I was thinking of a better way to bring the authority back. John Cena could have told Triple H if he, Triple H, wins the Royal Rumble match, he, or the Authority, rather, can return, and he gets the headline WrestleMania. But before Triple H could win, Sting cost him the match. What do you think? It might have worked, but here's the thing, okay? And you're from Philly, so you would know this. You risk Sting getting booed in that building if the outcome of his interference is Roman Reigns winning the match. So if Roman is still winning and still going over, that doesn't make the fans any more happy just because they got to see Sting. He'll get maybe the initial pop, but when they realize what happened here, you really run the risk of Sting getting booed. And, you know, they booed The Rock, for Christ's sake. How bad would that have been if they would have booed Sting? Now, Sting costing Triple H the Royal Rumble match to help Daniel Bryan win would have blown the roof off the place. And I'm not just saying that because that was the match I wanted to see, Bryan and Lesnar. I admit that. But putting my bias there aside, it would have blown the roof off the place. And it's actually a great story because you could have done the deal with Bryan entering at number one, or he could have been number three or some early draw, whatever it is, and going all the way to the end, and it comes down to Bryan and Triple H, right, who had their big match at WrestleMania last year. For months and months and months, it was Triple H and the Authority against Daniel Bryan. So you bring back a little bit of that history. It comes down to the two of them. The place is going nuts. They're dying to see Bryan win. And then Sting ends up costing Triple H the match somehow. He distracts him or whatever. Bryan hits the flying knee. Triple H goes flying out of the ring. And in one fell swoop, you just set up Sting and Triple H and Brock Lesnar and Daniel Bryan for WrestleMania. Then you could do John Cena and Roman Reigns. You can bill it as like the past versus the future. Cena's been cutting promos for months now about how the company is trying to bring in these young guys. The Authority is trying to bring in all these young guys from NXT to knock me off my perch. Well, would Roman Reigns not be the biggest example of that? And would Roman Reigns not get cheered in a feud with John Cena? He sure as hell wouldn't be booed the way he is now. So right there, you got three of your top matches for WrestleMania. You throw in Wyatt against Undertaker and Orton against Rollins, and boom, there's your WrestleMania card. Didn't even take me 5 minutes to come up with that. Corey from Beaver, Pennsylvania, one of the best city names I've ever heard. Do you think Batista will come back soon, even though his movie career has taken off? And if Batista does return, who would you see him feuding with? Would you put him in the title picture right away, seeing that in storyline, he won the Royal Rumble and never got his one-on-one match for the title? Or, assuming that the Authority sticks around, was you had Batista feud with the Authority, mainly Triple H, seeing that in storyline, Triple H was the reason he quit due to the fact that Hunter would not give him what he promised him when he first came back. I don't see Batista coming back in a full-time capacity. I mean, I'm not saying he won't make a cameo, but I think as a full-time or part-time wrestler, he's done. I think that's it. I think Guardians of the Galaxy opened lots of doors for him in Hollywood. And now he's got the Bond movie. I know he filmed a role in that new Kickboxer movie. I know he's got other opportunities. And he's what, 45 now? 46? I mean, he was doing interviews when he came back initially and was wrestling, saying that he knew he didn't have that much longer. He was getting older. Now this happened. These movies are going to keep him busy for a while. So what's he going to do? He's going to be 47 years old now and turn around and be like, yeah, I want to come back for 6 months. Why would he do that? I don't think he ever comes back for any sort of real lengthy program unless he is just... He's got this thing about wanting to work a match with Triple H at WrestleMania, which I know he has said in interviews he would love to do. Never say never. I guess they could set something up with Hunter for next year, you know, at Cowboy Stadium if they wanted to. I just don't think Batista comes back. I think he's done. I think now that he's had this success, there's no reason for him. He came back. He won the Royal Rumble. He headlined WrestleMania. He got to reform Evolution and have a kick-ass couple of matches with The Shield. I mean, what more is there for this guy to do? Unless he just has this thing about wanting to come back for one more match and get a big win at WrestleMania. But I don't think it really matters to him at this point. Not with all the success he's having with the movies. What more could he possibly do that he didn't already do when he came back? He got to do all of those things. I'm sure it was cool for him to work with Hunter and Randy again. He got to do all of that. What incentive is there for him to come back if he's making big money in Hollywood? I just don't see it. Joshua writes in, do you think it would be feasible for TNA to take some of the WWE established mid-card guys who never got an adequate push, like Kofi Kingston or Dolph Ziggler, and make the main event guys and world champions in TNA instead of going after the old WWE guys? Well, I mean, they already kind of did that with Drew Galloway. I wouldn't call him old. And Galloway is a guy who never did get a fair shake, and I hope, you know, I wish him all the luck in TNA. Why would a guy like Kofi Kingston or Dolph Ziggler want to go to TNA, though? I guess would be my question. Could they not, you know, create more of a buzz and also make a pretty damn decent living by working for Ring of Honor, House of Hardcore, Lucha Underground, and just setting their own schedule, maybe going to Japan? Who knows? I mean, I don't see a guy like a Kofi or a Dolph necessarily fitting in Japan as well as some other guys would. Although, I don't know, Dolph Ziggler in Japan... Yeah, I could see that, I suppose, and he would have some pretty damn good matches, I would think. But those guys, believe me, they can make a killing on the indies, work in whatever dates they want for whatever promotions, and they would have more of a buzz than they would if they went to TNA. TNA is not a place that I see a guy like a Dolph Ziggler or a Kofi Kingston going, man, I gotta go there. Like, that's the place to go. You know, if you're a mid-card guy in WWE, you're not getting a fair shake, and you want to leave and go somewhere else. A lot of guys have done that recently. I don't think TNA would be very high on their lists of places they would want to go. And then there's the money as well. You know, what kind of money can you pull from TNA that you can't pull elsewhere, right? Because money is obviously still a big issue for TNA. But so is exposure. It's not just about money. You got to say to yourself, if I've got a brand here, I'm outside the WWE bubble. I have a name, I have a brand, I have to protect that brand. If I go to TNA, that level of exposure that I had before plummets to the bottom of the sea. Is it worth it? Is the money worth it? Is the opportunity they're giving me? Do I have so many friends there? I would just love to go work there. Is it worth it to, you know, compromise your brand by going somewhere where your exposure level is going to drop like a, you know, just drop like a rock? I don't know why they would want to do that. You know, I keep using that word buzz. I sound like a fucking bumblebee, but there's a reason I use that word. Now I just need somebody to Photoshop my face onto the body of a bumblebee. You know, when a guy makes a debut somewhere, you want to make a big splash. And you do that elsewhere. You don't do that in TNA these days. At one time, that might have been true, but now that's no longer true. I don't know why any of those guys would want to go to TNA. Because even if they went to TNA and they made them a world champion, what does that really mean? What does being the TNA World Heavyweight Champion right now really mean? What does it mean? I mean, are they just, you know, a mark for the title that they'll go and be like, okay, yeah, they're going to make me the champion. That sounds good. No, I think these guys are smarter than that, and they know they could do better by going elsewhere. Ron wants to know, what episode of The Sound Off did you play R-A-S-S-L-I-N by Glenn Goza? Ah, yes, the infamous wrestling song that they played at, what world class, it was a world class event, I forgot which one. I don't know. I don't remember what episode that was. It was so long ago. But I mentioned it here because I'm actually kind of curious. So maybe somebody listening can help Ron out here and let us know. Or can go back and search if they want to and find out what episode of The Sound Off opened with the Glenn Goza wrestling song as an intro. You could probably find the song on YouTube if you're not familiar with it. It's quite cheesy, but in its own way, quite great. Finally here, Adam the Maniac Massaglia, one of our great PayPal donators here. I got a Hulk Hogan DVD set about 10 years ago, and one of the matches on Disc 3 is Hogan versus Kurt Hennig from 2001 in the XWF. How much do you know about this promotion, and whatever happened to it? What I know about the XWF is it formed after WCW went under, and there were a lot of known names on there. They brought in Hogan, Hennig. I know Jimmy Hart had something to do with it, I think, or maybe that came later on. The Nasty Boys, I think Mabel may have been part of it. And it was just, you know, an alternative for WWE. You know, guys needed somewhere to go. WWE was the only game in town, and so the XWF was born. I vaguely recall there being some other names. They did some sort of storyline maybe with, I want to say Sable was involved, and I think Piper, and maybe they were both GMs or something. It was something like that. And then what happened was WWE ended up signing a whole bunch of those guys to contracts, including Hogan and Piper and all of them. And so, you know, I think they were shopping XWF around for maybe a TV deal, but it was hard because they had footage of all these guys. But by the time they were shopping this footage around, those guys weren't even working for XWF anymore. They had already been snatched up by WWE. And anyway, so that's the extent to which I have any knowledge of the XWF. I don't know where it ended up. I don't know who's in possession of the footage, although if WWE had footage of the Hogan match with Hennig, then they may own the footage now. I don't know. But that's what the XWF was. For those of you attending WrestleMania in the Bay Area this year, Mania Crawl is the official bar crawl for fans of the Salamonster Sounds Off. It is a non-profit bar crawl in downtown San Jose. Hours before the big show. It's a great way to find other wrestling fans like yourself if you want to hang out with them. You know, we kind of did that in New Orleans. There wasn't any sort of organized bar crawl that we were part of, although I know they did do Mania Crawl last year. Unfortunately, we weren't a part of it. But when you're in town for a big show like WrestleMania, all wrestling fans tend to gravitate towards each other. In New Orleans, I think it was a lot easier because of how central everything was. Everybody was on Bourbon Street. And in California, I think it may be a little more fractured. So it's cool that you know, these guys are doing something organized, so everybody knows where to go, and they can all hang out in one place. I think that's really cool. So go on maniacrawl.com right now. It's free to sign up. You got to sign up so they can have a sense, at least, of how many people are participating in this thing. I know they've got well over 350 people now signed up for it. So check it out. Maniacrawl.com has all the information you need. I told you guys I had an announcement about next week's show. I will not be attending WrestleMania this year. I'm taking a break. Money is tight. And plus, it'll be nice to watch it on TV this year. Yes, first time in 4 years I'll be able to do that. Anyway, why do I mention this? I mention this because usually the Four Horsemen ride together at these things. Myself, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, Webmaster Mike from SEScoops.com. And half the crew is not going to the show this year, which means that we won't be able to do our roundtable show that weekend like we usually do. But that does not mean that we are not doing a show together. We are. Next weekend, we are getting the gang together for a special Sound Off the Wagon episode. Yes, alcohol will be present. Not enough to get stupid or anything like that. I'm not down for that. I'm sure we'll have fun. We'll talk about Raw, any other big stories from the week, maybe do some mailbag questions, and we will do some early WrestleMania predictions for the matches that have already been announced. I know they won't all be announced by then. It's kind of hard to do a prediction show this far in advance, but we'll do the best we can with what we have. So that's next weekend, episode 373. That'll be the normal, regular sound-off episode for that weekend. I'm not doing two shows. This will be the show. This will be the show for you guys to listen to next weekend. a special Sound Off the Wagon edition. That'll be on March 14th. That's Saturday. We're recording on Friday night, but by midday on Saturday, the show should be up. So hopefully you all are excited about that. It's always fun to get together with those guys and do a show. So that's next weekend. Before we depart here, there is one more thing I have left that I want to make mention of, and that is this week's sad tweet. There is a sad tweet this week. You can tweet me your own suggestions for sad tweet of the week. Let me know. At Solomonster is my handle, and I may actually use it here on the show. I got to give a thank you here to Fleece Johnson, who is on Twitter, at Like Abbas, LikeAbbas, one of the fans of the podcast here, who pointed out to me a tweet that Vince Russo posted. Now, I mention this because last week I gave an update on the whole Vince Russo website debacle, how he got shut out of his own website. Apparently there was some kind of a business dispute with his partner, Chris Cash, who, by the way, posted a very lengthy blog post this week explaining his side of the story. And not shocking at all that he is very heavy on details, something that Vince Russo is not very heavy on, so you can imagine who I believe in this back and forth. But anyway, so Russo was answering a bunch of tweets from people who were asking him about the Chris Cash stuff. Chris Cash claims that he and Russo went in on the whole Pyro and Ballyhoo.com project as 50-50 partners. That was the agreement that they had. And there was somebody on Twitter who was asking Russo, point blank, like, is that true? Did you go in 50-50 on this as Chris Cash suggested? And Russo would not answer the guy's question. It's a simple yes or no answer. He refused to answer it. Oh, I've already answered that elsewhere. I don't think he has. But I don't, and if he, and by the way, if he has answered that elsewhere, maybe he has it, I'm not aware of it, then why the fuck couldn't he just tell the guy the answer? So he's dodging the question and dodging the question, and finally, he gives up, and he posts this tweet. This is from Vince Russo. He says, "Those who killed Jesus did so because in their view, he was a liar. Doesn't get any sadder than that." And then he took a little Twitter hiatus for a while. So here's a guy who is, you know, he claims to be a born-again Christian and who, you know, far be it from me to accuse him of being, you know, disingenuous when it comes to that. I'm sure he found God and he's a very religious man now. I just find it very odd that he would use any sort of comparison to Jesus Christ in this situation, as though the two situations in any way, or the two individuals in any way, compare. But Russo invoked the name of Christ in this back and forth. Which is ironic because I remember watching a lot of what Russo would script back in the day, in the WCW days and TNA days, and a lot of times his writing and booking would actually make me scream out the name of Jesus Christ, although for very different reasons. Russo never did answer the guy's question. A very sad tweet indeed from at Pyro Ballyhoo. Big thank you to Fleece for pointing that out to me. Had he not pointed it out, I never would have even known that this tweet existed. Can't say that I spend too much of my time scouring Vince Russo's Twitter account. I could think of other things, better ways I could spend my time than sitting here browsing through all of Vince Russo's tweets. You know, for example, I've been thinking about painting this room, painting the walls, and sitting here and watching those walls dry. I'm sure it would be a lot more fun going to get a tetanus shot at the doctor's office. That probably would be more fun. Stepping on a rusty nail without the tetanus shot probably would be more fun than it would be to scour Russo's Twitter account. Anyway, you get the point. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. I live tweet during Raw every single Monday night and during the pay-per-view shows, so you can follow me on there. We're all over Facebook, so be sure to send a friend request or request to our private discussion group. Solomonster Sounds Off is the full name of the group. Please keep voting in the Podcast Awards, podcastawards.com. Again, you can vote daily through March 24th and get your friends and family to vote as well. And check your inboxes after you vote because you're going to have to click a link to verify your vote. These people don't screw around. So please keep voting for us on there. We are under the sports category, up for Sports Show of the Year. And you can make a PayPal donation to this show as a show of support. TheSolomonster.com is the place to go for that. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. Please also show some support by using our Audible link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I can't tell you how important it is for you guys to do that. And it's such an easy thing to do. It doesn't cost you a thing. You get a free book. The show gets a little kickback from it every time somebody signs up for a trial. So you'll definitely be helping us out by doing that as well. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. And, of course, ProWrestlingTees.com/. You like that, right? /Solomonster Sounds Off. We have a ton of t-shirts up, more to come. And please consider buying a shirt. We will see you right back here next weekend. Again, probably a day early on Saturday for a special Sound Off the Wagon episode of the show, number 373, with myself, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, Webmaster Mike. God knows who or what else may be part of that show, but it should be a lot of fun. And until then, be well, stay safe, and we'll see you right back here for a very special episode of the Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
They give us the dreaded fuck finish. Lame, lame, lame. You want to do the finish where the guy gets DQ'd for kicking ass? How about not doing it with your Intercontinental Champion? How about that? Some of these matches will go 10, 12, 15 minutes only to get a fuck finish or no finish at all in the end. If WWE insists on fucking the fans over so many times, the least they can do is buy us dinner first.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.